Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
More and more workers are saying, I'm done. A record 4 million people quit their jobs in April, just as employers are facing labor shortages. NPR's Andrea Hsu looked into why this is happening.
Jeremy Gombieski got his first restaurant job at 16 as a dishwasher at a Big Boys. He's worked his way up over 26 years.
I love being a host for people. You know, I love getting people food, making people happy.
But the pandemic took the joy out of his job as the general manager of a breakfast place in San Diego. There were days when just he and the cook were handling all the takeout orders. And when indoor dining resumed,
every hour or so, I would have to argue with somebody in the front who didn't have a mask.
Sure enough, last October, he got COVID and then brought it home to his whole family.
I'm pretty sure that I got it from arguing with somebody at work.
In December, California went into lockdown for a second time, and he was furloughed. The time away opened his eyes to what life with a family could be like if he didn't have to put in 50 to 60 hours a week at the restaurant or work on holidays, especially Thanksgiving and Christmas.
You know, I want to see my one-year-old and my five-year-old's faces light up when they come out and see the tree and all the presents that I spent 6 hours at night assembling and putting out. So
when he got called back to work last week, Gombieski quit, putting an end to his unemployment checks, which had been a cushion. He and his wife figure they have enough savings to last a month or two. So she told him, let's find something you're happy with. He's open to jobs in retail, maybe data entry. But one thing's for sure, he only wants to work 40 hours a week.
I think that this is clearly a real phenomenon where more workers are quitting than we've ever seen in the past.
Daniel Zhao is a labor economist with the job site Glassdoor. He says in normal times, high quit rates are a sign of a healthy labor market.
They signal that workers feel more confident in order to actually leave their jobs and find a new one.
But right now, he thinks there are all kinds of reasons people are quitting. Some people may have just waited out the pandemic to leave a job that wasn't a good fit. Some people are quitting because they can make more money elsewhere. Professor Siddhal Neely of Harvard Business School is focused on yet another factor. Thanks to the pandemic, she says, workers now feel empowered to speak up about when, how, and where they want to work.
We have changed. Work has changed. The way we think about time and space has changed.
And for a younger generation of workers, that could mean entire careers that look nothing like they would have before. Take Jonathan Caballero, a software developer working out of his basement in Hyattsville, Maryland.
This is kind of where I set up with screens.
He has four screens in his home office, also a whiteboard and a guitar.
When I'm tired of looking at the screen, I just pick it up and...
Music, he says, has helped him get through the pandemic. Caballero took this job last year knowing he'd someday have to go into the office. Now, with that day approaching, he's decided he'd rather not commute 45 minutes each way in a car he'd have to buy.
Yeah, I don't think I want that anymore.
He's only 27, but in the pandemic, he noticed his hair was thinning. He thought to himself, I need to start living.
I mean, I haven't really been through much of the U.S. or the world. All the time, I'm always like wishing, like maybe I wish I could be just working by the beach or something like that, and maybe after work just go swim.
Now, he's not uprooting yet. He owns his home and is working to fix up his backyard fence for a dog he got in the pandemic. But a couple months ago, he began looking for a job with better remote work options and soon had multiple offers. He settled on one and now is just waiting on a background check.
I think the pandemic has changed my mindset away, and like I really value my time now.
Yes, he says, there are bills to pay, but also life to enjoy. Andrea Hsu, NPR News.
I've never been a fan of the NCAA.
Yeah, me neither.
You know, my senior year in high school, I literally couldn't find a reason to go to college. So I didn't care where I was going to get drafted. I knew I wasn't going to nobody college, waking up at 5 a.m. and trying to figure out how I'm going to eat at lunchtime.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I just, that never was a that never was appealing to me.
Martin Jenkins played football at Clemson University in South Carolina. Back when he was a student, he sued the NCAA saying he was forced to put football ahead of his studies. Yesterday, after the Supreme Court ruled that the NCAA cannot set limits for something called enhanced education-related benefits, he talked to our colleagues on All Things Considered.
Going out and playing and seeing your name on these commercials and on these massive games where you know a bunch of revenue is being generated, and then going back to the dorm later after the game or the next day and not necessarily being able to afford a great meal to, you know, replenish your body or, you know, something basically as simple as that.
Ramoke Huma also played college football for UCLA. He founded the National College Players Association, which is an advocacy group for student athletes. Our co-host Rachel talked to him yesterday.
I'm just excited. You know, I think this is a lot of validation for so many people who have fought for college athletes to have equal rights, which includes equal rights under antitrust laws, meaning the NCAA has no right to act like it's above the law and cap players' earnings. And so a 9-0 decision is more than I thought would happen, but very happy, unanimous decision. That I think that's going to weigh heavily.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about those implications in a moment, but can I ask you to explain how these restrictions on benefits have affected student athletes?
This case in particular is a reflection of the NCAA's price fix. So a school doesn't even have the option to pay players any kind of compensation, not one penny of what the players generate. And there are a lot of athletes from low-income homes, predominantly Black athletes in the revenue sports in particular, that have been harmed over the years because of this. They who would have surely gotten more money and been in a better position to graduate, complete their degree, to set themselves up more securely financially, which is what every student wants to do when they go to college. So they've been exploiting college athletes for generations and generations, and today's a major step toward some relief.
I may be putting you on the spot, but is there one story you could relay, one anecdote that illustrates this?
Yeah, you know, actually, it was with my former teammate. He was an All-American linebacker. This is the reason why I started the organization. He was broke and hungry, scholarship checks, because the NCAA's low cap on compensation wasn't enough for many players to even have food. Even to this day, you talk to players, and a lot of players, you know, they don't get enough for food. And he was on a radio show kind of like this, talking about how tough it was to get by. And someone left groceries anonymously on his doorstep. And the NCAA punished him. They suspended him. He didn't even know the groceries were left on his doorstep. Didn't know that his roommate had taken the groceries in, but it didn't matter to the NCAA. But he was from a low-income background. They're selling his jersey in the store. And the NCAA says, well, we'd rather have you hungry than to have any groceries because of our rules. And really, you know, that was kind of the catalyst of starting this organization, and we played a role in actually bringing this lawsuit forward. So it's been a long time coming.
The NCAA has argued that by giving students even these non-cash benefits, you know, in the form of scholarships or laptops or whatever, that somehow that was undermining their status as amateur athletes, and that in turn was going to diminish fan enthusiasm. The court dismissed this outright, but I'd like your response to that argument, too.
Well, it's a ridiculous argument. First of all, if you look at the polling nowadays, most Americans believe college athletes should actually share in the revenue that they produce. So most Americans support college athletes being paid. And the idea that amateurism is popular is ridiculous. The NCAA has changed its notion of amateurism every time they lose a court case. You know, each time they say, well, if players get a stipend, it'll be the ruination of college sports and amateurism will fall and the whole thing will fall apart. Well, we won stipends in the previous lawsuit and nothing fell apart. The fans didn't even notice or didn't care. You know, name, image, or likeness said the same thing. Mm-hmm. The sky is going to fall. And now we have 20 states passing it. Everyone agrees that it should happen and the sky won't fall.
Well, let's talk about the changes, especially when you say other opportunities. I mean, what could be the further implications for this decision? I mean, I just want to point out that Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote his own concurrence to the court's decision, saying that they should have gone further. He wrote, quote, "Traditions alone cannot justify the NCAA's decision to build a massive money-raising enterprise on the backs of student athletes who are not fairly compensated. The NCAA is not above the law." I mean, do you see future litigation that could change things even more substantively for student athletes?
Sure. I mean, first of all, he's 100% right. And just to be clear, what today's ruling did is it allowed schools to pay about $6,000 per year in education-related compensation if they want to as an option. But it didn't go beyond that. It didn't say colleges and the conferences can determine what pay beyond that to be decided. So that it didn't go quite far enough. But, you know, a couple of things. Yes, it opens the door for additional litigation to make the challenge to completely eliminate the NCAA's price-fixing scheme and allow most likely conferences to determine on their own without colluding, without getting together and breaking the law to determine what is fair for college athletes. We also have a bill that we're sponsoring in California that would actually ensure that every college athlete in California receives fair market value. Now, most of the athletes do already, with the exceptions of the predominantly black sports, which is football and basketball. So there's definitely a racial justice element. There's definitely a way to get compensation to college athletes through state law. I think that's the most practical avenue. And we'll see how it goes. We have this bill that will be heard in January.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time. Ramogi Huma, a former football player for UCLA and the founder of the advocacy group for student athletes called the National College Players Association. Thank you so much for your time.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
The stakes have heightened in a battle between New York Times Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones and the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. The journalist was hired as a professor at the university, but has been effectively denied tenure so far. This week, her legal team informed the university that she will not join the faculty unless she is offered that guarantee. This fight has had ripple effects. Black faculty members, staff, and students have left the school since the controversy began, and more say they will follow suit. Joining us now is Donna Jones. She is the chair of the Carolina Black Caucus, a group of Black faculty members, students, and alumni at UNC Chapel Hill. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for being with us. So exactly how many members of Carolina's Black Caucus right now are talking about leaving the school?
Yeah, I mean, we've heard from several members. I can say for myself, I've heard from at least 40 individual people who are faculty and staff members here at Carolina who are considering their options right now. I mean, some of them are actively searching outside of the institution. Some of them are just trying to figure out their next steps. But I've heard from at least 40 individual faculty and staff members of the Carolina Black Caucus about this issue.
And how much of that desire to leave preceded the effective denial of tenure to Nicole Hannah-Jones?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of what we're seeing right now is still fallout from Silent Sam. You know, just a few years ago, our university was in a huge controversy over the Confederate monument that stood at the front steps of our institution. And we went from everywhere from building a building to house it, which was going to cost millions of dollars, to a $2.5 million settlement to the Daughters of the Confederacy to give it back to them. And, you know, a lot of our institution, students, faculty, staff, community members alike, were very, very frustrated with how our institutional leadership handled that situation.
And I also understand that burnout has been cited as a reason for a lot of faculty members of color wanting to leave. Is that right? This is based on some reporting from WUNC, one of NPR's member stations.
Absolutely. I mean, our Black faculty and our faculty of color are in a unique situation. You know, they're asked to do their research, they're teaching, they're ready to go through the tenure process and preparing for that. But because there are so few of them, so few of us here on campus, students flock to them in a different way than some of our majority faculty members experience. And so there's extra time, there's extra emotional burden there to be the only. Some of them are literally the only one in their entire department who is a person of color or a Black person. And so when a student finally sees you, they want your time, they want your energy, they want to be in your office hours, they want to have lunch and dinner because they haven't gotten that opportunity in the past. You know, I've heard from several of our undergraduate students who are so excited about the potential for Nicole Hannah-Jones because some of them have never been taught by a Black faculty member. And I think that is really incredible to consider in 2021, right?
Absolutely. I am curious, what are you hearing from individual Black students about this whole controversy so far and how the controversy around Nicole Hannah-Jones's tenure is affecting their view of UNC Chapel Hill at this point?
Yeah, you know, the one thing I'm hearing that's resounding from all of our students is embarrassment. They are embarrassed to be in the news yet again for their institution. I'm hearing from young alumni for their alma mater. You know, a lot of them and a lot of us love Carolina, and it's just sad and embarrassing to continue to be in the news for negative things. But like I said before, you know, a lot of our students were really excited about the opportunity to learn from Nicole Hannah Jones, and they're feeling like, you know, this is just another way that they aren't being appreciated and valued and respected as students, because this is the kind of experience that they were hoping for, a lot of them. And even from young alumni, I've heard from some of our Black Hustlemen alumni who said, you know, I was ready to come and re-enroll, take a class just to be able to sit there and absorb information and knowledge from Nicole Hannah Jones, who is a giant in her field, right? And so it's really sad to me that we are here yet again.
Well, how does UNC Chapel Hill come back from this, in your view? What are members of the Carolina Black Caucus asking for now in the name of equity, in the name of inclusion, beyond simply giving Nicole Hannah Jones tenure?
You know, right now, we think that tenure is the first step. We want this situation resolved with tenure, right? We want Nicole Hannah Jones to be able to come here. And I think what she ultimately wants is to be back at her alma mater and share her skills and talents. And that's what we want. But in addition to that, you know, we want to see a financial commitment to faculty recruitment and retention. We want to see an additional financial commitment to our diversity and inclusion space. I know we have a new chief diversity officer coming in, and we want to see that person set up for success. And then, of course, we want to see a commitment to continuing to recruit and retain Black faculty, Black staff, and students. But we can't do that without changing the climate, right? And so what our ultimate expectation is that our leadership take a deep dive into what they're hearing from us right now. Listen to what our students are saying. Listen to what Black faculty and staff have been saying for years. Take heed and make change.
Donna Jones is chair of the Carolina Black Caucus and assistant dean of students at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Here in Britain, the Queen's residence in London, Buckingham Palace, has revealed for the first time just how many of its staff come from ethnic minority backgrounds, and has conceded more needs to be done on the issue of diversity. Here's our royal correspondent, Johnny Diamond.
8.5% of Buckingham Palace staff are drawn from ethnic minorities. That compares to 13% of the UK's population at the time of the 2011 census, and just under 40% of the population of London, where many staff are based. Could do better, is the palace's own verdict. We recognise we are not where we want to be, said a senior palace source, and we want to improve. Next year's target is 10%. But change may be hard to achieve. Whilst public funding has remained steady, the extra money the monarch made from things like paid visits to the palaces fell by half. A £10 million shortfall was covered by cutting back on some events like garden parties and by a recruitment freeze. Without new faces, it's difficult to change the profile of household staff.
Johnny Diamond.
You know, Chuck, you were saying the other day, you know, only 7 black coaches in the NBA out of 30 teams.
Yeah.
3 of them are in the conference finals here.
There's a couple things we need to address. We need more black coaches. We need more black front office people. To have a league that's really pretty much 80% black and only have 7 out of 32 black head coaches. 30. And listen, it's a bigger problem in the NFL and in college football. Those two, they're worst. We're bad in the NBA.
Yeah,
but
3 in the NFL.
Yeah, 3 in the NFL. And in college football is probably the worst by far. But there's something we need to have a conversation about. Hey, listen, get the guys opportunity. If they fail, fire them. You can't just keep recycling white coaches and they get fired, they get new jobs. But listen, give these guys a chance. These guys they're doing a fabulous job, and it's just something that we need to talk about it.
Yeah, I agree 100% with Chuck in this regard. If the league is, like you said, 85% African-American, sports is the only job in the world where you could be on a job for 15 or more years, like a player. And then when you leave that playing, they say,
that experience doesn't count anywhere else. And you got to start in the mailroom. Like, there's no other job. If I work for Microsoft and I work for 15 years, I'm one of the hot, and we blow up and we become one of the greatest companies. I'm one of the hottest commodities on the job market for consultation, for executiveship, or anything else. Sports is the only thing to say, no, you know what? You played, you know, Patrick Ewing, you played 20 years in the league. Be the third assistant down in Orlando. That pissed me off when I used to see stuff like that. Like, to me, their experience, you know, is their job. No one has that experience in the locker room. Can he learn the traits, that organizational skills, practice plans? Yes, those are learnable traits. Can you learn what it takes to be a good player? No, you have to experience that. And so for me, that's where the front office doesn't, in the NBA doesn't understand, and that's what the coaching doesn't understand. And when you have 3 out of 4 in the Western and Eastern Conference Finals, that is clear evidence that they don't know.
You guys both touched on it beautifully. No need for me to reiterate. Also, don't forget women. I think it's time for a woman or women to get the opportunity to be a head coach. So I just want to throw that out there also.
I don't want to cause any problems, Lieutenant. I just want a new partner.
Oh, I understand. Your partner's a racist prick, but you don't want to stir up any bad feelings with him.
Well, he's been on the force for a long time. And
17 years.
And I do have to work here, sir.
So, you don't mind that there's a racist prick on the force. You just don't want him to ride in your car.
If you need me to go on record about this, sir, I will.
That'd be great. Write a full report. Because I'm anxious to understand how an obvious bigot could have gone undetected in this department for 17 years. 11 of which he was under my personal supervision. Which doesn't speak very highly of my managerial skills. But that's not your concern. I can't wait to read it.
5 black UW police officers filed claims this week alleging rampant racism within the university's police department ranks. The allegations, first reported by the New York Times, include an officer who says beginning in 2017 and becoming worse over time, white officers in the UWPD have insulted, demeaned, and mistreated me on the basis of race because I am an African American. The officer, Russell Ellis, claims white officers used the N-word and joked about racist stereotypes, including one incident in which a supervisor told Ellis, quote, "I thought all you guys like watermelon and Popeye's chicken." Another black officer says someone placed a banana in front of her locker with a note saying, "Here's your lunch, you expletive monkey." Collectively, the 5 officers make dozens of allegations against the department and are each seeking $8 million in damages with their claims, a first step toward filing a lawsuit against the university. In a statement, a UW spokesperson said, quote, "We are stunned by the allegations outlined in these claims. Any one of these incidents described here would prompt an immediate investigation and appropriate disciplinary action based on the investigation's findings." The university says it has no record of any complaints. UW says it plans to initiate its own investigation into the allegations now that they've been brought to administrators' attention.
Some of these allegations happened as recently as last month. The officers say their superiors were aware of this racist conduct, but took no meaningful action to stop it. I reached out to one of the officers who made a claim, and he referred me to his attorney. Live at UW, Ted Land, King 5 News.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, June, I almost said January. Can you believe that? Losing my mind. Friday, January. Victim of white supremacy, struggling. Stride one more. See if third's a charm. Friday, June. There we go. J-U-N-E. Friday, June 25th, 2021. So I have been told. Our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Not for spectators, hopefully. Victims of white supremacy who have figured out these are things that you do so that they do not make jokes about you and Popeye's chicken and bananas in the workplace. Officer, was it badge or no? That never happens. You have figured out you are treated with courtesy, dignity, every day in your workplace. Holiday, warm weather, cold weather, June, January, doesn't matter. You are treated as a valued, competent employee. If you have figured that out, you're paid well, you get all your raises, all your promotions, let us know. Dial in, get it on speed dial, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Before we get to the task at hand, Gus T broadcasting live, Seattle, Washington. Now we are in the midst, that would be Seattle and even broader Washington State and even Oregon, as I understand it, the Portland area as well, are under an excessive heat warning, I think until Tuesday, sometime early next week. So it's supposed to, I think tomorrow it's supposed to be like 97 degrees here. I think Sunday it's supposed to be like 101 degrees. And I think Monday it's supposed to be like 103. And I believe all three of those may be records like ever. They said it's supposed to be hotter than it's ever been recorded by individuals classified as white in this region. I think Portland too. It's supposed to be even hotter in Portland. So we shall see. Hopefully we'll make it through safely. If it's not too much trouble, maybe you can say a prayer or three for Gus T over the next few days. Most of the people, like Gus T, do not have air conditioning in their residence because we don't get temperatures like that here. The average daytime temperature high in Seattle is usually 71 degrees in June, which is exactly what it had been prior to this week. So no need for air conditioning if you're just going to have a 71-degree day, which is a lot of what you get in Seattle in June. So we will see. I will say, incidentally, for today, I think the excessive heat warning already in effect, it is 86 degrees. If you are outside having to do construction work, traffic work, picking cotton in this sort of weather or produce, it was kind of warm, especially if you had to be out like, you know, concrete, that sort of thing. No grass, no trees, what have you. If you were able to be someplace with grass, trees, shade, all of that, didn't have to work strenuously and that sort of thing, it was not too tough. I was, you know, outside, went out to the park, was lovely. Went out to the lake, actually, was lovely. Individuals classified as white looked like they were living their best life, like they were doing it up, having diving contests and taking rowing classes and reading and playing with their canines and all the rest of it. They had floats, one in the shape of a piece of pizza, one in the shape of a donut, one a cloud with a rainbow over it, living their best life with lots of sunscreen. But it was 86. If you were in the shade, it was a spectacular, where I guess is, it's not even 6 p.m. yet. It's still afternoon, technically. If you spot in the shade, didn't have to be out working, like I said, in the sun, glorious day. That is day one. We'll have to check in tomorrow for the compensatory call-in to see. It's supposed to be about 10 degrees warmer. We'll see what Gusty thinks about that. Let's see. Oh, my addendum. I was at the lake. I thought it was going to be so hot because they said it's going to be record heat. I was going to hop in and have a swim. I said, before the water's so cold here, I said, oh, this will be the one time I can go swimming. I thought it's not even that warm. At the time, it was like 83 degrees. I said, I don't think that's excessively warm. Like, I don't think it's exactly warm enough to even get in the water. That was my assessment of day one of the heat wave. Again, we'll check in tomorrow when it's supposed to be 10 degree increase. All right, workplace racism. Before we get to emails, untiljustice@gmail.com and callers, the sound clips that we heard at the beginning. Let's see. All right, so we started off speaking of living their best life. They had the segment about lots of folks quitting their jobs. I have not heard that one from non-white people, black people specifically. We've not had cows callers dialing in to say, I'm quitting my job. Or I guess that's not really the same, saying that I am leaving this job to start my own company. That's not quite the same thing as I'm quitting this job to sit and ponder life and think about what I'd like to do and all the rest. I guess we did have some folks who transitioned. If they want to count that, cool in the gang. But I don't recall us just having folks saying, you know, this is lame. This job is lame. Y'all can take this and shove it. If we did, bravo for you. And bravo also if we've had folks who have been able to successfully leverage any power to get better resources, better accommodations, better work hours, anything, at the better compensation, anything to improve your plight in the workplace. Because they're saying, you know, people are leaving the workforce, they don't want to come back, and, you know, are able to successfully barter to work from home, hybrid workplace, and all the rest of it. So this is the time. Speak up. That quote that I love from Minister Malcolm X, it's in his autobiography, which we read. He said that his parents used to talk about how his brother Wendell was so well behaved, and why don't you be more like Wendell, and he doesn't whine and cry and all the rest like Malcolm did. And he said, hey, when I was hungry, I would whine and cry and whine and cry and whine and cry, and finally I would get my biscuit or whatever he was trying to get. And he said, man, polite, well-behaved Wendell went to bed hungry many a night because he would not ask for a biscuit. So I would say this is the time to speak up and ask. If you ask for a raise of $20, you might get a raise of $10. 20 would be, hey, 50 would be better, but even if you just get 10, that's better than nothing if you had said nothing at all. So speak up, try to do better for yourself. Even if it means leaving this job and getting a better plantation, do that too. Try to improve your situation in this time, plantation worldwide. Let's see. Next, they talked about the NCAA. Man, do you not have your children in football? I don't care what the compensation for it comes in. I mean, just that alone, like the fact that there are so many stories. I think they had one the year the University of Connecticut basketball team won the men's basketball championship. They won many, but one of their more recent triumphs. It was a similar story. They had a black athlete saying, man, we didn't even have anything to eat. We're, you know, going through the March Madness and the NCAA bracket and all this nonsense and struggling to eat, man. Somebody, can you hook me up with some food stamps? Like, my goodness. Can of sardine. And then the story they shared, like, we're struggling, same thing, different institution, we're struggling, I'm hungry, somebody, a peanut butter sandwich I can have, maybe a few coupons, maybe anything. Somebody leaves groceries on the front porch. They're so hungry they don't even question, is there, you know, did you wash your hands? You know, did you use hand sanitizer? Sandwich, love it. And then we get sanctioned. And I've heard many, many black athletes talk about that. Like, you are out of your mind. Like, you're not going to pay me. And then you will turn around and sanction me if somebody buys me a steak dinner. Like, come, one and done, I'm out of here. In fact, I don't even want to do that. I'm going right from high school. Forget all of this nonsense. Duke, UNC, Coach K, all of that. Talk about rife with racism, white supremacy. And then we go bang right on that. They won't even hire black coaches, which is true NCAA level as well. And I was stunned that that popped up on Inside the NBA, where they do talk about, I'll say, race from time to time. But to hear them talk about that, and almost everyone, and even the point about Patrick Ewing, like, absolutely, Patrick Ewing, Hall of Fame Patrick Ewing, dream team. Matter of fact, Patrick Ewing is one of the few individuals ever in the world who has been inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame twice. He got inducted personally for his career, and then he got inducted as a member of the Dream Team. And he won an NCAA championship. So, I mean, this is basketball greatness at every level, for a long time, played in the NBA for 20 years. How is that not immediately come sit on our bench? We got you. If we already got a head coach, then come be an assistant. And as soon as, you know, we get rid of this bum, bang, you are going to be the new head coach of the franchise. I mean, the Knicks, my goodness, come sit on our bench. We've had a garbage team for years, so you would be the attraction. We can come and wave at Patrick Ewing. Nah, you don't know what you're doing. I thought that was spectacular, except we got to the part that ended, victims guaranteed qualified, but to hear Shaquille O'Neal, victim, saying that it's time for a women coaches in the NBA, like, that's not what this segment is about at all. One, they're about to have that anyway, but that's not what this segment is about at all, and that is so typical, the conflation, that we got to pull that in, and invariably what they mean is white women. That's what they're talking about. But anyway, I was stunned that that came up at all, and that it was mostly logical, and then at the end we got to get, you know, nonsense, you know, to round things out. Anyway, we'll see how the compensation goes for the NCAA athletes. As I said, that would not change my stance at all. It is in no way beneficial to have your child in that nonsense, especially if they're going to fight and scrape and be miserly about even allocating benefits to the players for all of this and scrape and fight tooth and nail all the way about that. Like, no thanks, I'm good. You all can have all this nonsense and, you know, see how much you enjoy football. You can, in fact, you can regress. Go back to the era when you did not allow the Negroes to play and see how much fun it'll be then, right? Everybody loved it once before. You can love it again, and you can have all the brain damage for your offspring. Let's see. Next, the segment, they talked about the royal family, so-called. They're going to investigate and acknowledge that they need to hire more non-white staff. I thought this was interesting, particularly the in lieu of the charges leveled by Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, the big Oprah Winfrey interview not that long ago, to have this come out like, oh, yes, we're working. Diversity is important. We got to do a better job and all that, whatever that means. They'll probably do the same thing, hire a bunch of LGBTQ and white women and all the rest of it to come and be members of it. Now we're diverse. Even get some folks in a wheelchair. White people in a wheelchair, be specific. And then the last segment, Gus T, broadcasting right here, Seattle, Washington, where we've been the entire time the Cows has been on the air. The segment, the University of Washington police. Now, I read about this in the Seattle Times before I heard that audio report. That audio report doesn't really do it justice. So I'm gonna read what they had in the Seattle Times about this. So, all right. So Seattle Times, this is from June 22nd, 2 days ago. UW's black campus police officers file multi-million dollar claims over unbearable racism, and they have unbearable in quotes. And incidentally, they have Mr. Ellis, the officer that one of the officers, black officers. They have him on the walkover from Husky Stadium. Like, oh, I've walked over that so many times. If you are there for a football game or even a basketball game, or if you just take the light rail through Seattle and you get off at the University of Washington stop, then you can take the little sky bridge and walk over and take a stroll through the university campus. But anyway, to the report. Earlier this year, as Officer Russell Ellis near the end of his late shift at the University of Washington's campus police department, one of his superiors offered him an energy drink. You can pause it right there. Doesn't that idiot have a rule about not consuming items at work? Like, nah, I'm good. Nah, I'm good. Nah, I'm good. I think that fool has even said, hey, if they know what your treats are, oh, hey, look at here, Gus T. Got an organic vegan strawberry shortcake donut for you. I'm good. They do have organic vegan strawberry shortcake donuts here in Seattle, about 5 blocks from where I'm sitting at. Yes. But if that showed up in the workplace, I'm good. So Mr. Ellis offered her an energy drink. The sergeant was laughing. Ellis said, noting that the beverage was flavored like watermelon, "I thought all you guys like watermelon and Popeye's chicken." Dun-dun-dun. The senior officer said, according to Ellis, who is black, a second black officer described a nearly identical encounter with the same sergeant 2 years earlier. They just keep telling the same jokes over and over and over and over. Ellis, 49, said the exchange left him stewing privately with anger and humiliation. But he said it was far from the first time he had faced racial disparagement or discrimination. What lame terms. During his years at the university, a sprawling lakeside campus in Seattle, it is sprawling, student body over 40,000. The school touts diversity goals to the public, shares anti-racism resources with the student body, and shapes the ideals of one of the nation's most progressive and one of the whitest big cities. All five black rank and file officers in the university police department filed multi-million-dollar damage claims this week, describing a culture of entrenched racism that has included racial slurs, vicious comments about black people, and open hostility directed at them and at members of the public. Dozens of incidents ranging over the past several years through last month are detailed in the filings. Officer Karen Young said she sometimes found bananas placed in front of her locker, once with a note that referred to her as a monkey and said, "Here's your lunch." Officer Hamani Nolan reported that a white supervisor hit him with a long stick-like object and remarked, "You people should be used to being hit with these." Norm Stamper did not work at the University of Washington Police Department, but he was chief of the Seattle Police Department, and he talked about the nigger knocker. "You people should be, yes, used to being hit with these." Officer Damian Taylor said he overheard white officers talking about the case of George Floyd, who was killed by a white police officer in Minneapolis last year, sentenced to 22 years today, I believe, saying his black ass got what he deserved. After a black officer was placed on leave for an internal investigation, Officer Gabrielle Golden reported he heard three white colleagues talking with one referring to the officer in question with a racial slur and saying that he better not show his face around here. In a series of legal notices filed with the state, which are required ahead of a potential lawsuit, the five black officers did not name the specific individuals who made the comments. The officers seek $8 million in damages for workplace conduct that they said has made their jobs unbearable. They said that supervisors in the department were well aware of the conduct, and some of them engaged in it themselves. "I can't sleep sometimes," Ellis said in an interview. "This has affected me in ways I couldn't have imagined." Let's see. I think I will stop there. Yes, because they deviate and go to... they give some logistics on... the student body and what I said, massive student body, nearly 50,000 students, which is bigger than a lot of towns. And this is a problem in many police departments. But yeah, did they have another story that I was going to share? I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. But yeah, racism, white supremacy in Seattle, major problem. And these are five black officers in the department who are saying this is how they are being treated. Wow. What do they treat the regular citizens like who don't have firearms and a badge? Incidentally, for these workplace incidents, the fella comes up to you and says, I got an energy drink. No, thank you. Oh, I thought all of you guys liked watermelon and Popeye's chicken. You can give them the silent one. Love that always. You can give one that would be mandatory. I couldn't do the silent one for this one because there is at least one question. Who is you guys? might even set him up nice for that one and give it to him slow and with a smile. I didn't quite hear what you said. Let's say it's to officer or sergeant, whatever it is. First of all, repeat what you said. You can have your recorder out. Repeat that. Boop. And then after he repeats it, who is you guys? And just let him explain. Like, doesn't matter what he says. Oh, okay. Thank you. Got our explanation? Great. That's you guys. Nothing else to say. Nothing else to share. I suspect he would think twice about doing that around you. All it would take is one. In fact, even if you said nothing, you just hit him with, And that's that. They put the banana on the lock, whip out the phone, click, take a picture. Person wants to come and yuck, 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 and all the rest of it. Oh, do you want to get in the photograph here? Just to acknowledge that this is your handiwork. Stand by your work, they say. And take a picture. That's all. I'm not stunned. I'm not, you know, crying and all the rest of it. This is what I expect. This is why George Floyd, his killer, sentenced today, just literally minutes ago, 22 years. This is why that happens. Both the fact that these are enforcement officials doing this, and this is what it means to be white. This is why these things happen. So it's just a matter, I say all the time, composure. When these things happen, I don't, you know, get mad and what? What did you say? Popeye's chicken and out. No. They will probably end up reprimanding you, saying what they'll call, we can't have hotheads, you know. This is a workplace environment. We have to be professional, and sometimes we might say things that come across the wrong way, and, you know, it sounded like the sergeant was just trying to be friendly and offering you an old energy drink. And maybe things got misconstrued about watermelon flavor or whatever, and all that's irrelevant. We can't have cursing and brawling in the workplace, see? Expecting these things. These are not my homies. These are not my friends. I expect them. In fact, I expect somebody here, not many, many folks here, to practice racism, white supremacy. I'm already working on my responses in advance. Anywho, that's all of the sound clips. If folks have any other thoughts on what they heard in the sound clips, you can feel free to share. Certainly, if you have your own reports of racism, white supremacy, as I said, mandatory. If you figured out some things, this is what to do. You will never be like Officer Ellis, where folks are coming in and talking to you in this sort of way. That will never happen. You are, as I said, you are treated with the utmost courtesy, respect, professionalism every single day by every single staff member, employee of the company. If you figured out how to achieve that, share. Let us know what you did. If you had to wear certain clothes or certain things to say or how you carry yourself, whatever it is, let us know so we can scratch some of these things off of our list of problems. If you are having difficulties and would appreciate commentary, hopefully logical commentary, counter-racist thought, to help solve problems without creating new problems, feel free to share. We will do our best. The number 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. We'll get our folks who dialed in, no spectating. Again, no spectating. This broadcast not for folks to just listen in to whatever problems, troubles black people may be experiencing in the workplace. But before we get to the folks who dialed in, we had a person, I was negligent. I did not see this email from earlier this year, so I'm just trying to make sure I do not miss. If you write in, let me know if I missed an email or what have you. It is helpful if you can, in the subject line, put workplace racism. That way I try to put all those in a specific folder. But that is neither here nor there. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Anytime I miss something workplace racism related, I always go back and try to make up for that when I do. All right, person wrote in. Hi, Gus. Lately, I have been very depressed at work. I have worked for government for almost 9 years now. I am in a department where non-blacks who are not competent or have no experience related to the job are being promoted. I am at the point where I don't even apply for the jobs posted because I know my work ethic will never matter. My fellow non-white friend is telling me that if I take on more projects or prove my worth, I will eventually get a promotion. I have taken on additional tasks in the past, and instead of being rewarded, I ended up with extra work at the same pay. Is this situation unique to me? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I could go to another plantation, but there is no guarantee that I can move up there either. In your opinion, why are certain non-white people allowed to achieve these high-paying positions while others of us are struggling? What can we do to ultimately make our life more comfortable? Now, that last one sounded a bit beyond workplace racism in terms of things that we can do to make our life more comfortable. Get a blender? That's what it seemed like. Meant beyond workplace racism in terms of making life more comfortable. But to your immediate concerns, that is an all-the-time thing in terms of black people who are competent, professional, qualified, not being promoted, not being given opportunities. That is very common. If we have any folks here who can relate to that, now you for sure have incentive to share. let it be known, because like I said, a lot of times I think when we're not aware, we don't believe, right, that this happens all the time, right, that many black people in particular are denied these type of promotions and opportunities when they have the skills, they have the know-how, they can do this job, you know. Give, of course you need training and that sort of thing, but it doesn't matter. That's not where we're at. As he said, we're promoting people who are not competent, not skilled, not trained. They're not black. Sometimes that can be enough. Now, to the question about now, why do some of these folks get promoted and what have you? I think in a system of white supremacy racism, I think this person, number one, said some of these are not, or I don't know if he said non-black. He said non-white. Let me make sure I look at this. Yeah, he said non-black. Excuse me. So we are in a system of racism, white supremacy, black get back. If you are classified as black or melanin, many times that may be enough for you to miss out on opportunities, be what they call overlooked, say you're overqualified, and give other lame reasons to justify denying you workplace opportunities. That's very common. I think, too, in a workplace situation, sometimes individuals classified as white are not ignorant. And so they will look at their niggers and see who can we, if we're going to do some racial showcasing, who would it be best for this position? We want to see if we can get the person who is most confused. Sometimes it'll be, hey, we're going to promote this person or put this person in this, give them this title. And it's just going to be to mistreat other non-white people. So who do we think will be most receptive to those duties, right? A lot of evaluations that go into this. And especially, it's a different metric of evaluations if you're not about justice. I think Codified Software Engineer, she talked about this exactly last week. I don't know if she's listening live. She can scold me, I guess, if I'm misquoting her. But I think she talked about this exactly and saying that, hey, we being victims of racism, we've all been subjected to conditioning and, you know, trying to prove our value, that white validation. You know, let me take on 15 extra projects and stay and work overtime every day this week and come in twice on the weekend and three times on Sunday and, you know, all that, and trying to get, you know, a raise or whatever it is, and saying the same thing, that it seems that doesn't even matter. You know, and she said, I think she put a number on it. I think she said that I'm going to come in and I'm going to do about 70%. Not anymore. I'm not going to be losing sleep and going crazy and all the rest of it. I'm going to do about 70%, and that's that. Like, I think that's extremely important for just in terms of making a decision for yourself, health, wellness, how you behave, taking care of yourself, and having correct expectations so that you're not, with the, I guess the metaphor that they'll use, putting yourself through a meat grinder, trying to earn brownie points or have them think that you're special and so that you can move up the ranks. We've had tons of folks who said that they did all of those things and it did not amount to a hill of beans. So I would say super important to not internalize. That was one of the points I wanted to make in earlier. So frequently when we don't attribute it to others practicing racism, white people denying us those opportunities, we think that it's something defective about us. I'm not a hard worker. I'm not competent. I didn't go to the right school, or I didn't do well enough in school. I didn't pay attention. You know, I didn't apply myself well enough, or I came in less something, you know, where it's deficiencies with us, where it's no, that's not the case at all. Not saying that we're perfect or what have you, or don't have more to learn, but just saying, hey, this is exactly what this person wrote in, saying, hey, some of these folks who are getting promotions and raises and what have you, they are not qualified. They don't have the academic expertise. They don't have the on-job know-how. Like, they're clearly not qualified. They don't have the experience, none of it, but they're still moving through. What is going on? System of white supremacy, racism. That's what's going on. So just in terms of the plantation that you're on, if you've been someplace for a long, like 9 years, that is a really long time, especially if you feel like you've been there a really long time and you're not making any progress at all. And people who haven't been there as long as you are there and making progress and moving forward, advancing, whatever it is, and you're not, it might be, hey, see if you can at minimum show that 9 years off on a resume that, hey, I am committed. I'm reliable. I'm not some flyby. I'm going to be here for 6 months or 2 days or what have you. Take care of me and give me an opportunity. And even see if you can put your resume together, polish it up, and see if you can find something that is maybe advanced of ahead of where you are right now in terms of salary and responsibilities to continue growing your career. Because I don't know if this is something where if you say, hey, I could stay here for another 9 years, another 5, 10 years, are you content with staying there and just being in the exact same spot? If you are, and then you take whatever, you know, I guess minimum pay increases that they get over that time period and whatever else comes with it, if you're content with that, fine. But if you feel like, hey, I'm not satisfied, and it's sounding like you're not satisfied. The very first sentence here was, I have been very depressed at work. That is something to take seriously. Anybody. When your work environment, when things have gotten to the point where you are depressed, sad, it's impacting, you know, how you feel, your sleep patterns and all the rest of it, like, whoa, it is definitely time to refresh the resume, find something better, find something new, because yeah, this has perhaps run its course. Your work environment should not be something where you go home and don't want to sleep, don't want to eat, are frustrated or sad or angry, all of the above, some combination. Like, you should be able to get home and move forward with your day, not feel like you're still, you know, trying to process all the craziness that happened, and what am I going to do, and I'm going to go in and see this person, or like, that is, and how long are you going to go through all that? I told the person I neglected with their email that hopefully things are improving or have improved, and they can give us some tips on how they navigated to get through all this. But if we have other folks who've been in that position, have any thoughts for that, but I mean, anyone out there, that is super serious. We talked about suicide. We talked about mental health. Dr. Welsing has talked about that. If you, because of your work situation, really anything, but we're talking work situation, are feeling very depressed, take that seriously. That is like emergency, emergency, emergency. This needs to be resolved immediately. That's what that signal is. 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see if we have folks who have commentary. If you have your own situation, that's great. If we have folks, I guess, thoughts for our listener, that would be good as well, about being depressed and feeling as though he's not given opportunity to advance in the workplace. Let's see, folks who dialed in with a hand up. Line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Non-Clemson grad, South Carolina. Yes, sir.
Yes. Hello. And I do find the story that you just read to be very interesting. Depression is a very easy thing that can overwhelm you, especially in situations like that, especially with dealing with the non-white people. I do have a couple of stories, and maybe they're a little bit related to the story that you just read. And this is some of the stuff I think about, especially in types of stories. So, before I get to my main story, I will say this one thing. About a week ago in my department, my director announced that we're doing a corridor study, which is really a thinly disguised development study, which is going to, in my opinion, ethnically cleanse all the Black people in the surrounding area of study. Now, when he announced this in the meeting, of course, I had my questions. And one of the things I caught up with the idea that there's a lot of people who live in these surrounding, you know, motels because they can't afford to find apartments for whatever reason, whether they got evictions on their records or, whatever issues they might have, like not having jobs, things like that. And one of the things I said is that this plan, I said this in a meeting with a whole bunch of white people, my manager and director, that basically this plan just comes up as a plan for that will end up in the ethnic cleansing of the Black people from the entire neighborhood. Interestingly enough, one of the other white planners agreed with me. That's neither here nor there. So going back to the story that you just shared, my mother, she's an architect. And one of the things she works for the city of New York, has been doing so for well over 20 years. And, you know, she, just like the story of the gentleman we read, she constantly talks about a situation where her fellow coworkers who have been there for a long time, definitely have the skills, would go ahead and then potentially train someone, and that person who they trained would be promoted over them. And it's happened more than a couple of times. So, sometimes non-white people like my mother get a little bit smart. So recently I had a conversation with my mother this past week, and there was an intern I believe to be a white Hispanic. So apparently this intern, she, you know, fresh out of school or grad school, and the director, because the manager had just left the department. So that means my mom got a little bit more responsibility. So the director was going to place the intern underneath my mom's tutelage. And my mother, instead of just simply saying no, she simply responded, "Well, I already finished my project, so I have nothing to give the intern right now, but I do have an idea." She said, "You know what? There was a project that was just finished. What we'll do is that we'll have her try to recreate the project to a certain degree so she can get a little bit of experience." So my mom gave the intern like a ruler or something like that, and gave her the last project and said, "Go measure this, go measure this, go measure this." For some reason, this intern was so inept that she could not even handle the simplest instructions. And because of the situation that my mom had created for her, this intern might have been a little too scared to even ask for help, or maybe even a little too embarrassed. So much so that instead of putting in 2 weeks' notice, this intern simply put in, called over the phone, emailed the director, said she quit, and simply disappeared. I heard the story, absolutely hilarious. And then I responded to my mom, "If you would have tried this on me, this would not have worked. I called you and asked you for help." And then my mother responded, she knew exactly what kind of person she was, and knew exactly and knew that the intern was not going to ask for help, and knew that her plan was going to work very well to get her so frustrated that she wouldn't even want to bother. So this intern easily could have been a person that my mom trained and easily murdered over her. But unfortunately for her, my mom has had enough time dealing with these types of situations that now she's found a way to deal with it, and maybe just a little bit harder for these people to, you know, use her for their ascendance. So I guess that was something I learned from my mother, which I really appreciate. She has great. And going back to the chart. I constantly have conversations with my mother and friend about my friend who lives here with me in South Carolina. He used to be a teacher at pursuing his PhD. Of course, he had a person who was his boss or his manager at the time. And this is well over almost, I think, 15 years ago now. At one point, he was driving to Clemson University, and he was really upset. And he got to a place while he was driving and said, If I go in tomorrow, I'm to shoot up the place. It was at that moment he quit and decided to become a private consultant, and he's been doing this private consultant thing 11 years now. And this man, he is very good at his job, $400 an hour good. I'm lucky that I even get to have conversations with the man that the last hours, and he would talk to someone like me, even though he's worth that kind of money. But just goes to show you how different you really take over in a way. You know, years, what you want out of that job. Obviously, you be careful of your mind. Bad things can happen. I've been in my job for about a little less than 7 years, and I do take on extra things like that, but I don't take on extra responsibility just for the sake of getting promoted at my job. I take on extra responsibilities for the sake of learning new things. So what I mean by that is that, you know, I take on new things. I take on new tasks. I try to find new ways of doing things and explaining my work or trying to understand my work, because the point is I'm trying to become my own private consultant as well, too. And I use my job as a classroom for improving my skills and my knowledge so that when I leave that place, I'm a competent person at my job as opposed to someone who's simply trying to get promoted because he does good work or a lot of work. Just a different way of looking at it. And then, of course, when I first got out of grad school, my last story, one of the jobs I applied for was a job in Hampton Roads, Virginia. Now, I ended up in where I am in South Carolina. But here's the thing. A couple of years ago, there was a black engineer in Hampton Roads, Virginia, who went postal and shot up the place because he was having issues with a manager. I believe it was a black male. And when I hear people say things like they're getting depressed and stuff like that, this is not to say you shouldn't be depressed, you shouldn't feel how you feel. But I think about that along the lines of I easily could have ended up with that job in Hampton Roads, Virginia, and I could have easily been one of the many victims that could have got killed when that black male went postal. Not blaming the black male, I understand. But, you know, this is what it means when someone, at least when I hear someone say that they're depressed. Potentially you are, not to say that you're, you know, a harmful or you're going to harm someone or harm yourself, but unfortunately in the world we live in, this is where that kind of stuff leads to. So I hope for your sake, you know, if you are going to work hard, you know, work hard for your reasons, not for the simple reasons of proving that you're good at your job to get promoted, because I think that that place leads to a place of ruin and mental anguish. And with that, I'll Hey, Gus, you're talking. I think your microphone's muted.
I did not talk because I thought my microphone was muted myself. So I was trying to hush until I got it corrected. I think I got it figured out now. Much obliged, non-Clemson grad, brilliant mother. Wowee. And that's why I'm so glad he was able to share that, because I thought that would resonate in terms of, or at least that there would be a lot of people who could say, oh yeah, I can relate to that in terms of a black person being on a job. I do great work, am competent and motivated, you know, want to advance and do better and learn more things. Nah, that's not the guy we want to promote. Let's find somebody. I'm very painfully familiar, I don't want to say story, but indictment, crime in the system of white supremacy, but to have the same thing happening in his mom, like I've seen this so many times, broken record, what to do? Hey, let's have this person show how competent they are. And even that is related, because it was said in the email, like, hey, these people, non-blacks, these people are being promoted and they're not even competent. It's not like, you know, I'm losing out to somebody who has a lot more experience and a lot more academic pedigree and all that. Not the case at all. Like, okay, let's have this person show off, you know, so they can get some knowledge and what have you. And then if you have problems, had to sneeze. Then if you have problems, just ask. Now, that's also come up on workplace racism a ton. White people not wanting to ask a black person for information in a workplace setting, or having to like disclose publicly or sometimes even to a specific individual black person, I don't know something. Might even have to be, I don't know something that you know, which is what it would have been in this case. Like, oh, I don't know this. Non-Clemson grad's mother, can you, you know, help me out, hook me up. I'm a little lost here. Like, uh-oh. For a whole lot of folks, for a whole lot of individuals classified as white, like, that is a bridge too far. I'm out of here. In fact, it's so far, I can't even do a 2 weeks notice. I'm out of here. Like, wow, that is, what? In fact, I mean, for that sort of performance, whoever was talking about, like, hiring, whoever hired this person, whoever was talking about promoting this person, whoever thought that this person would be an asset to the company, like, whoa. You need to do some serious reevaluating of your, like, people skills, how you assess folks as being credible and competent. Like, what in the world? Like, what if we had put her in charge of something serious? Jeez. And then you take that, this little incompetent white woman, you take that and come back. He said, you've got black male, intelligent, smart, $400 an hour smart. Like, wow. And same way of thinking that somehow I'm not valued. I'm not, you know, competent. Not making through. He said, I feel valuable just being able to talk to this guy, you know, chat it up with him. Like, this guy's so intelligent and doing all kinds of, we don't want to find somebody else. Where'd that girl go? Didn't know how to get that project together. Maybe we can hire her. That is white supremacy rate. Like, Dr. Kanban talked about that. Like, this is so long running. Like, lots of people get confused and thinking like, yeah, we just need some competent black people. We show them we're not stupid and we want all that. Not understanding what it means to be white, not understanding white supremacy, racism. And I've heard Mr. Fuller give the exact same suggestion that non-Clemson grad offered in terms of going on a job or being in a workplace scenario. If you want to work hard, take on extra projects or extra responsibilities, you are doing so for your own education. These are skills that you can take with you, apply as you start your own enterprise or to another job or whatever. Not just, I'm working hard to impress them and, you know, they're going to think, wow, this Negro is special. He's not like the rest of these Negroes. Oh, yeah, we want to keep him. Like, just getting that out of you. If it happens, great, you can be surprised. But not even thinking that way, Mr. Fuller said the same thing. Just try to learn as much as you can. Learn about how the system of white supremacy works, what it means to be classified as white. But learn as much as you can. Try not to even think of it as, you know, I'm really here to impress them and show off. And, you know, they're going to appreciate what a job I did. It's not going to happen. Probably not that way. And might even lead you to a lot of frustration, depression when it doesn't happen that way. Again, much obliged, non-Clemson grad in South Carolina. The number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, if we have any folks specifically with the being on a job, ambitious, aspiring, denied, and feeling that depression, frustration about all that, if other folks have experienced that, let us know. Like I said, I feel like this is a very common one. And, you know, do you stay? Because that's important too. You have a what they call government job. That's what he said. 9 years. Do you relocate? Pick another job, or do you stick it out, just stay there? And, you know, until you find something that you think, hey, this is really worth switching things up. This is obvious pay increase or whatever it is. I'll take this one. Or do you just ride things out till your retirement, whatever it is? See some of the other callers have an opinion or their own situation. Other folks who have a hand up, line should be open if you have comments.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Gus. I'm with my union at my job, and a fellow victim came up to me the other day, and he told me that one of the male whites there have been forging time on his time card, because the days when he's supposed to be off work, he's putting on the time card that he's been working. And he also divulged to me that this white individual don't even know his job. He don't know his job. He was hired. He put on his application that he knows to do all this electrical work and stuff like that, but he don't know how to do any of that except for, I guess, plumbing. And then one time for him to do the electrical work, the white supervisor in charge, who's in charge of everything, have this victim and another victim go do this guy's work. And he told me that it's been really depressing for him, because he said he gets so mad because this race soldier gets away with not only forging on his time card, but him and this other victim have to go do this guy's work. And he said he's been depressed a lot. And he goes home and he takes it out on his family, you know. So he had came to the union to see what he could do. So me and the other shop steward been trying to, cause an investigation to happen so we can look into all this unjust networking that's going on. But he's been really, really depressed. And he said he goes home and slam things down on the table and stuff like that. So I've just been telling him to, to relax. And I've been calling him after work just to check in on him. But these are the type of stuff that goes on. And these people get away with that, because like you say, that's what it means to be white. So that's all I have for now, Gus.
Wow. What a disgrace. Much obliged for sharing. And I mean, that's the other component of it, White people terrorize us on the jobs. That word again, depression. You go home with all that anger, frustration. You take it out on yourself. We do overeating, undereating, oversleeping, undersleeping, all these self-destructive behaviors, or we take it out on other people. Is he going home slamming things around and fussing, your partner, your children, who have nothing to do with it? They talked about all the increase in domestic partner violence over the past 16 months or whatever it's been now. That's why, this is super important. That's why I say when you start to feel depressed over the workplace situation, emergency, like, this is calling for immediate attention and even sharing. Like, that's one. The folks who are being most immediately impacted, the attempted family members, impacted if you lose your job, whatever it is, or impacted just they're causing you all this stress on the job and you come home and are angry. Letting those folks know. I think so many times that's such a big part of it. You get all this stress and everything, and then you say, well, I don't want to burden family and all that, and all the rest of it. Let them know. Maybe even children and everybody, because a lot of times children have no idea of the terrorism that their parents experience in the workplace. Talk about it so that they can better grasp, like, oh, this is what happened. And I think especially even... getting a little echo, yikes. Especially even talking with your partner, because it might be that they're the one to say, hey, you know what? Like, man, this is having such a mental health impact on our attempted family unit here that we need to look at getting you another job. Like, let's get that resume polished up. We need to get that exit strategy, like, pronto. Because sometimes we ourselves are just, I can get through it. I can can get through it. You know, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and blah, blah, blah. And sometimes it takes another person with a little distance to say, no, we don't need to get through this. Let's pick a different plantation. You know, like this is having too much of an impact. The treachery is too great. Like, let's find something different. And I think that'll be better for everybody. Let's get that exit plan together. Talk about it. They can help, you know, try to problem solve, strategize, help do some replenishing from all of that and be better informed about why all of this explosive rage and frustration, where all of this is coming from. Like, oh, okay, we got it. We got it. The white people, racists at work are terrorizing dad. We got it. But that is, I mean, that is so standard. And then he said the time component of it. You have this incompetent racist, then you got to go behind him and do all this extra work. Like, oh, my, is this taking time where I could be going home? Is this taking time where I could be starting my own business, doing other things? Like, incidentally, that's one where I would document. I think for most companies, if you have enough times where a job that should take 2 hours, now you're having labor for 4 hours because someone is having to go back and do this over again and again and again. Racism does cost, but I think for a lot of folks, that might be a bit high of a cost. If that has to go on again and we keep seeing, like, what is going on? Is he really that ignorant? We got to go back and, oof. I would document and make sure that that's unexplained in the billing. Like, oh, we had some problems and had to go back. I don't know if we need to get some retraining on one, but there were some problems. We had to go back and do some reworking of things. Just make sure that that is documented. 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 Much obliged, our male caller. That is so, it's depressing that it's so common. Like, the specific situation for this individual and their attempted family, horrible, but that, I mean, this is so common. So, it's like a racist classic. They probably got movies about all this, the no count black people and not being allowed to get a raise. And they come up, that's nothing but a man. Nothing but a man. He gets fired on the job and comes home and throws his wife around. Ah, y'all are this. Years, and that's old. Like, nothing but a man. That's, I don't know, 70 years old at this point. I think almost everybody who was in Nothing But a Man is dead now. Ivan Dixon. Anywho, other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Greetings to you and the callers. I was thinking about the guy that who's at work depressed, and I guess it's depressing, and he's still, there's no room for promotion. Well, not for him. They're not making promotions available for him. Depression is serious, and it's silent, and it leads to other things. So regardless of, I think you need another job, because you'll end up, something else will happen internally from being depressed at work. I'm not thinking, you know, doing anything to anyone else. Well, could just pop off, but, or not pop off. I don't know. Get mad and get angry and violent, but I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking more or less internal, like a stress, heart attack, high blood pressure, stroke, that kind of thing, because you're spending at least 40 hours there. So perhaps whomever to meditate a lot too. And I don't know, either audio books or I get another job, but while you're there, you're going to have to find a way to tune out everything that's a bother and just do whatever it is that you agreed to do in that interview. and please get another job. Being depressed, I'm depressed at just being depressed at work, and that's what pays you. And then you know you're not going to move any further, or it's less likely. And if you do, you're going to have to do all kind of stuff in order to keep that position for as long as they allow you to have it. It's not worth it. It's not worth your mental health or your physical health. Please, please. My own personal workplace racism. So I still have the same supervisor. Well, one with one. So the black boy has the Spanish speaking supervisor, and the girl, the little girl, oh, with the white parent, and she has a white dad, and her mom is Japanese, and what is that? Spain, whatever that is. Yeah, so that's the makeup of the poor baby. And the dad is totally unavailable because the mom's makeup is Japanese and Spain. And she's sumo size. And because a lot of the non-white people don't understand racism, she didn't get it. And she's still joking around with the white guy. So now they're here with the child. I do a lot of work with the little girl. With this black supervisor, that's also my personal supervisor, she gets a lot of help. I worked hard with her before the supervisor got on, and since the supervisor came in, the black one, and just took over this case, the other white supervisor moved off the case, and she's solely on the little boy's case. The black supervisor did not want to take on the little boy's case because of it's tough in that house, and that's a lot of work in the black male's house. There was a party maybe last weekend at the black male's house. I'm only saying the story because it affects the behavior of the child. It's been all kind of festivities at the home, I guess, lately. The child is there. There's at least, if they would have a get-together, there would be at least three children on the spectrum, at least. So with this Big Bang Shebang party that they had recently, must have did something to the little boy, because the baby ran Monday afternoon. The baby ran to the door. When he heard that doorbell, he ran to the door. His dad was wherever. He ran to the door crying and just jumped in my arms. I had to just throw my purse down and just say, what happened? And he just, I was like, I know. And his dad looked like, I didn't do nothing. I don't know what's wrong with him. I'm just looking. And still jumping from, the party. Oh, yeah, because Father's Day was the next day. So it's still, lit. It's still whatever you hung over. However, oh my stars, I can't imagine what the children went through, because he just cried for 10 minutes, just holding me, fussing. Well, I can't prove it, but something. So, and then the mom, you just telling her all the business. Just telling her all the business. Everybody's like, yes, he's telling me everything that happened Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. So, I'm just walking away because, so now he's riled up. He's wah, wah, wah. He's just everywhere. There. He's running all over the house. Now he's making these sounds. So one of the autistic cousins, I wouldn't even say he's autistic. He, whatever his disorder is, also causes autism. So he's, oh dear. Fine, everything is messed up. He's just, now he has this is a 14-year-old cousin that was there all weekend and there when I got there. So he has since he can't digest his food, he has a bag, and it's awful for him. And just from going to the hospital to get that bag, not being vocal, they labeled him angry, violent, aggressive, because of the way they implemented this
it was just awful for him. So it's awful not being able to vocalize. And then things happening to you and you don't know what's going on. And then especially with the way the rules are with the not too many people in the room or however it goes. So he's over and he's, so then here are adults, huh? Go get it. And he, wah! And so they, come get it. So I'm like, wait a minute. So then there's a 16-year-old, that's his brother. So he makes his noise, but he's got to get out. He can't hang around making all that noise. Noise is upstairs for you, 16-year-old dad ain't in the home. Upstairs for you with the noise. So everybody else is free to be downstairs with the noise. So it's after so long, you know, listening to this boy make this noise, my client start making that noise. So I said, doggone it. He's just repeating. This is how the rest of the boys communicate. Why not, right? So I mentioned it to his mom. Well, for before that, the mother of the boy making the noise, like, ooh, you even got him doing it. He making the noise too. And, no. So I said to mom, I think you should. On top of everything else, my client jumped off the stair rail. So when I get in Tuesday, they're opening the door and he's jumping off the stair rail. So I have to grab him and say, no, no stairs. So it was supposedly printed out, no stairs, no jumping on the stairs. And I guess somehow or another, somebody's supposed to come with this 8x10 papers, no jumping off the stairs or however they do it. Because I literally have the paper like with me, like, look at the sign, no jumping allowed. No, up there, jumping is not available. Oh, sorry. Able to jump. Like he's having a sign and he'll just get so agitated, so he'll walk away. So when they say, oh, so-and-so said no jumping, talking about me, he'll just get frustrated and just walk away. But they're not keeping it going. This is their home. So he's jumping from the rail. Nobody's saying nothing. I didn't want his dad, the little six-year-old. Oh, I told him to stop jumping. We're trying to keep him to stop jumping so his dad don't get mad and whoop him. And so here comes the mom. I don't know what she wanted. But then I'm telling her, I said, I think you should put the signs up that say no jumping. The signs, the usual three signs, put some signs up the stairs and up the rail that say no jumping. That's a good idea. Yawn. And she just so tired. So then I said, no, seriously, because when I walked in the door, he was jumping off the rail. Well, he's been working on it. He's been pretty good with it. He been trying to be good at, you know, jumping off the rail. And when I walked in the door, he was jumping off the rail. So I'm telling her why he's jumping off the rail, because of the YouTube video. It's a YouTube video that whatever the graphics are, the rails, some chicken video, the rails run together and it just makes him want to do it. Jump off the rail and whatever else they're doing in that little 3-minute video on top of all the other videos that he's able to watch. And I said, you're going to have to eliminate a lot of that. I said, and then you're going to have to be more vocal with him, because it seems like he's repeating what the other males on the spectrum are doing or saying to get attention, because it says no need to use words because it's working for the bigger boy. So she just yawned. And I said, oh, you know what? Never mind. Go ahead. No, because then she's working from home. So if it doesn't bother you, it doesn't bother me. It's just too bad, because it makes it real heavy for me dealing with the boy, especially if he's going backward. One more thing, and then I'll mute my line. So he's had, ever since before I went on leave, something's going on with either his ear or his teeth in the back, something that way. He's putting Ondex hard objects in his mouth, trying to do something. Nobody said, oh, yeah, uh-huh, he's been doing that, huh? Yeah, uh-huh. Nobody said, hey, can he check out whatever's in his mouth? Hey, can he put these small pieces away, because he's putting them in his mouth and he could choke? Have you taken them to the ear? I be wanting to look in his mouth, you know, sometimes and just see, but I haven't. So today, he's chewing. I'll be asking for
a minute. He's chewing. He's at. And then another thing is, since he can't talk, he wanted me to feed him his burger. I don't even know what he wants. The auntie, she's delayed too. She's a couple of years under me. She's awful delayed, but she's, he wants you to heat it up. I'm like, well, how am I cooking on that? But to heat it up, that's what he wanted you to heat it up. But he didn't want me to heat it up. He actually wanted me to hold it so he could bite it. I said, that's what you, well, you want me to hold it to bite it, and I heat it. So now I'm livid. So now, today, if he's eating something and it's hurting him to chew it, or something's going on because he's pushing his elbow to his ear. So I'm looking at him. I said, hey, excuse me, because she's there. She's always right there, but she's just so too busy. Excuse me, it's the left side. If you check the left side, is something going on the left side? Is he doing this? Like hunching his elbow to his ear. I say, yeah. Okay, I'm going to take him to the doctor. I'm going to take him to the doctor. I'm going to okay, okay. Like I'm agitating her, coming at her. But, I mean, man, he can't talk. Somebody's got to be an advocate. So, anyway, thanks for taking my call. I'm in my line.
Much obliged, Bay Area mom. Glad I didn't say the name at the beginning because I was confused about the person who dialed in. But that is Bay Area mom in California. I don't think they're in the path of the heat wave. I think it's not going to quite get that far south. But stay hydrated anyway. Man. Dr. Francis Cress-Welsing, when you play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring. Wow. Children having children. I mean, really taking the creative process in terms of having offspring, like, really, really taking that seriously. Like, that is the exact sort of environment. What is Dr. What? Throwaway children. Easy pickings. All the way. Easy pickings. I don't know, just for where it would be so frustrating in terms of for a work environment, because even if you're attempting to do spectacular work, which you can't because it's not supported by the parents or staff. Oh, it turned the siren off, thank goodness. It's probably the heat. But that's such a, talk about depressing work environment, because anytime you're in a work environment where you, I can't be my best. I think for most people, they want to go out, do a good job, be recognized, compensated for working hard, doing great work. That's most people. When you're in an environment, that is not possible. It's not going to be possible for you to do competent work. It's going to be undermined here. That is already like really deflating. That already kind of puts you in a, hey, whatever. You know, let's just get through, you know, for a lot of people, you know, because it's all, you already know it's going to be undermined, you know, whatever we're trying to do. It's no chance for an A plus here. With the parenting component of it, it's not your child and it's other children there and they're not paying attention. I mean, just basics. Don't jump off the stairs. Let's info. That seems like a good one. You know, we want everybody to be safe. You can get seriously hurt. Or it's not the stairs. Sorry. But there they go again. It's both times, as soon as I went to mute my line, they immediately turned the siren off. Next time, I'll just wait and see if they mute it on their own. Anyway, not jumping off the stairs, leaping off the railing to the stairs. I mean, I'll only pause just, I know not all of our listeners attribute this to black parents in general. Might happen in the system of white supremacy, things that, anything bad parenting is just automatically attributed to black parents, non-white parents, black parents specifically, I would say. Welfare queen is not a, they're not talking about black and brown moms when they're talking about welfare queens. Unless I'm in error. Anywho, with the parenting situation and jumping off the railings, like I was at the lake today. Now, they have a restroom facility and they have like a boating park staff facility side by side on the lake. These structures were not designed for diving. However, they were designed so that people, I guess, were not thinking, hey, maybe we should construct these so that people don't scale them and decide that they will conduct diving contests from the roof of the bathroom or the staff facility. But since apparently the folks who designed them didn't have that in mind, that is exactly what happens, and staff doesn't do anything about this. Now, one component is because of how they were built. There are about 50 different ways you can scale these structures, but at the end of the day, I did see that today. Staff, I think one time I have seen where they have, you know, tried to shoo people away, like, get down from that, it's not for diving, get down, all the rest of it, but, I mean, they've kind of just said, you know, forget it, lost cause, whatever. Staff was there today, and it made no difference. The little white children were diving off the side of the staff structure and had contests and all the rest of it. So white children do a lot of dangerous, crazy antics as well in the system of racism, white supremacy, for sure. But talking about black parents, like, wow, that was, I mean, it's difficult to listen to in so many different components, like just not being mindful about what children are eating. We can't even just say eating, what they're putting in their mouths and all of it. Like, and again, this is a work environment where you're trying to provide a constructive service. Like, this is not you coming in and talking about how to keep the septic tank running optimally. Like, this is your child. And yeah, really depressing work environment. And I would be trying to get, for many, many reasons, like just for so many reasons, I'd be trying to get out of there as soon as possible. Like, wow. Not workplace racism related, but parenting, that is, like, talk about cosmic assignment, like parenting a black child, like, wow, that should be super, super serious business. Producing, parenting a black child, most serious thing I've ever done in my life, period. That's the way we should be thinking about procreating. That alone would work against racism, white supremacy right there. Anywho, much obliged, Bay Area Mom. The number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Thought I saw some other folks who had hands up. So, again, not for spectators. Other folks who are with us, if you have commentary, observations. Again, if we have other folks, I suspect this would there might even be some other folks who have been in that position. Not getting promoted, not getting raises, other folks who are not black being promoted, given raises, all the rest of it, might be something. And like I said, if folks have a thought or two on whether or not a victim in this position, is it best go ahead and leave, stay there? I think we've heard one vote so far to go ahead and leave. I guess that's at least two, because I said the same thing. If we have any other folks with thoughts on that, that would be good to hear as well. 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks are spectating, I reckon. I'll make sure to get in one. We'll be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in. Dial in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We will catch up on the week's activities, the building collapse in Miami, down retired firefighter in Florida, close to his part of the woods, with lots of antics. As I said, Derek Chauvin sentenced today, 22 years, I believe. That was just a few moments before we went live, but that happened today as well. But lots that we'll try to make sense of tomorrow, in addition to, and I guess to see if, you know, how Gus T is making it through the heat wave out here in Seattle. Supposed to be the first day of near 100 degree heat. So lots of water in store between now and tomorrow when we get down for the compensatory call-in, but that'll be fun to catch up. Let's see. Making sure I check my email as well, untiljustice@gmail.com, just to make sure I did not miss any emails, trying to improve on that as we roll through 2021, and making sure folks do dial in. I can get it promptly and respond. I didn't see anything else this week. Feel free to drop us a line if you have a suggestion, I reckon, for folks who dial in, if you have your own situation or commentary on what you've heard from folks thus far. Let's see. Beating the heat, hanging outside for the day. Folks are still getting their thoughts together. I guess I would say for the police incident that we started with, since that was right here in Seattle, I was intrigued for a multitude of reasons. Incidentally, in addition to the artwork that they had for the piece being like, oh man, and I was intrigued because so many reasons. Even the cows didn't even exist. We had talked to white University of Washington police officers specifically. Back of the bus, right with Gus, we started the cows. Back of the bus, other non-white students, they had like a booth set up at UW talking about racism. This white enforcement officer walked by and was, what are you all doing? Blah, 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 blah. I don't want to talk, because they had a megaphone when they were talking so they could be heard. And he's like, I don't want to talk on a megaphone and all this other stuff. So he walks off. So I ended up talking to him later. Later on, he confesses like, oh, yeah, racism is a big problem. He was like, man, matter of fact, if you put a whole bunch of non-white people together in a room or in a house or whatever it is, everybody will get along fine. Like, they'll, you know, they'll trade or whatever it is, blah, blah, blah. People have disagreements and stuff, but they will get along. All you need is one white person and, ooh-wee, they will mess up everything and blah, blah, blah. And he stopped. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What am I telling? I gotta go. He walked off. But and this was all in the same day that this happened, same white officer and everything. But whew, I don't even remember like seeing black officers at the University of Washington, like a place that I spent lots of, like I could walk to the University of Washington right now. I don't remember seeing more than like one. They said five, so I mean, I guess that's right in line. Maybe I just missed the other four, or maybe they hired some more recently, maybe. But man, like that sort of work environment, again, like talk about depression, it would be all about codification and expectations. I am not thinking at all, these are my homies, folks that we hang out with and get a brewski or whatever it is, or they come in and my wife made you some cookies. You can wait until they leave, say thank you, and then discreetly usher the cookies to the trash can. These are not your homies. These are not your brothers and sisters. They're just individuals that you work with. Have to act accordingly for self-preservation and safety purposes, really, just, you know, and having correct expectations. I cannot emphasize that enough. I think a lot of the depression and frustration around this can start with thinking that we were cool, not understanding that these folks thought of us as niggers, not understanding that these folks practice racism, white supremacy, thinking that we were equals and they're going to treat me correctly, just having a false set of expectations about white people in our work environment. I think just starting out with correct expectations, I'm not surprised. It wouldn't matter what this person says. We can be courteous and work together in a professional manner. That's the goal. But I mean, hey, I would not be stunned about anything this person said. Like, don't you smoke crack cocaine? Fried chicken and crack cocaine? That's your favorite pastimes or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. As I said, you write it. Mm-hmm. Or take out the recorder, like you've already got all this stuff thought out. You know what I'm saying? You're not blindsided by this. Already know what it is. Let's see. Caller at 5640. 5640. Did you have commentary? You should be with us.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi. Good evening, Gus. Thank you. I was just going to say, for the person that wrote about their possible depression at work, I guess my advice is continue to seek out other possible employment opportunities, but just also keep in mind that it's getting harder and harder for blacks to even get employed, even those with degrees and even those with master's degrees in addition to their bachelor's. So because I've just heard reports that a lot of these graduates are just not getting hired at all. A lot of other non-blacks and non-whites, those that are classified as Asian or Asian Indian or Hispanic or Arab, are getting these jobs and thereby completely shutting blacks out. So I would say if the person does decide to seek employment, just to maintain their current means of employment, while, you know, keeping in mind the greater possibility of they're not getting hired at all because they are black. But while at their job, I would just say, just to continue listening to the cows, because I've even found that your broadcast, Mr. Augustus, has been very therapeutic for me as a person, a black person that, you know, of course has a job. Also listening to the old broadcasts as well, the archives has been helpful. And also, too, if the person, of course, seek out assistance in the form of therapy. But if going to a therapist, even if, you know, trying to utilize resources at their job, such as any therapy that may be offered, you know, through their job, even if that's not an option, or if they don't feel comfortable, maybe seeking out emotional support circles, you know, for designed specifically for black people, or as the greater public likes to say, people of color. But if they could find you know, some kind of support network for other blacks, even amongst his or own group of peers or trusted peers that he or she would feel safe with. So that's just my advice for the person that wrote in. Thank you so much.
Much obliged. Great suggestions, especially now that think where, I guess it depends on where you are. Depends on where you are, I reckon. But many parts of the U.S., things are reopening, right, to some degree. So it might be easier. And it's summertime, too. So it might be way easier to organize some sort of get-together. You could do it outside, or at least I know here many of the, like, public spaces, libraries and community centers, things of that nature are starting to reopen. So it would be more doable, or you could go outside, like I said, to do some sort of, you know, whatever you want to call it, like a circle. It could be just black people circle to share about workplace trauma, frustrations, whatever it is. And you could build from there, help people get resumes together or share networking opportunities, whatever it is. Like, it could, you know, be lots of things. But it could be easy to get that sort of resource together. If it already exists in your area, fantastic. If it doesn't exist, if you have, I was going to say more, but I mean, hey, if you have two people, that's how the Black Panther started. You could get two people, have your meeting outside, and by the end of the summer, if you have five people, like, that'd be amazing. Like, support circle, local, you could get together once a week or, you know, twice a month, whatever it is, the library or outside at a park. Or if you're outside, you can make it constructive. You could do some meditation together or do a little yoga together or take a walk at the park, walk and talk at the same time, or you walk a little bit, stop, eat, talk, you know. But yeah, I think that's excellent suggestions. for the person dealing with depression in the workplace. I think if anywhere, it's just my, you know, my analysis, my two cents, as they say. I think hearing content that is constructively focused on white supremacy, racism, or just things that are constructive, I think listening to that in an environment like a workplace can help with focus. I think it can help like with expectations, right? Just I'm listening to this. Sometimes people have said they've been listening to content and it ended up being related to things that were happening in the environment. So just being focused can help with having more accurate expectations and even how you respond. Helping just, I'm not surprised. This is the environment that we're in. It's saturated with racism, white supremacy, even if there are folks not classified as white, even if there's no one classified as white present. White supremacy, racism will still dominate all of our activities, thought, speech, action. Just having an understanding of that and then how I can best neutralize that without solving problems. Being in that frame of reference to begin like your workday is so helpful in coming to like correct solutions, how you want to respond to things that happen. Just a thought. Again, much obliged for the suggestions. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Incidentally, they said at the University of Washington, unless I misread the report, maybe that's possible. I read it several times at this point, but it could be possible. It seemed like they were saying that there are 5 total black officers in the University of Washington's police department. They continued and they said that the student body is nearly 50,000, which is mega, right? Said that earlier. But of that almost 50,000, only 3% classified as black. Yee. Or I guess depends on your perspective. For some, that's yay. Maybe even, you know, yee, it should be lower. You know, why isn't it 1% or 0.5%? And a lot of that 3% is black people who were born outside the U.S. So if you're talking like ADOS, black people who were born in this part of the world, like it's even lower than 3%. It is so low. I was on the third floor of which library? I think it was Suzzalo. If you look at the University of Washington, Suzzalo, Suzzalo. I was on the third floor of Suzzalo Library. I was looking east towards the Hub, H-U-B. It's a student center. And I saw a Negro male walking, I'm going to say, maybe 100 yards. Trying to judge, maybe, I'm going to say 100 yards. Yeah, about the length, about 100 meters, about the length of a football field. I'm going to say, yeah, that's about how far it was. Maybe give or take 10 meters, maybe. But it might have been exactly about 100 yards from where I was standing to where back of the bus was walking. And he was walking away from me. And I see black male. And I say, oh, that's back of the bus. Now, as soon as I said this, I said, now, wow, maybe Gus T has got extraordinary peepers. I mean, woo, Eagle has nothing on me. Like, he can spot a flea at 500 yards. Like, what? Look at that. Because of that, maybe that's true. Or the University of Washington has very, very, very few Negroes. Now, I guess both of those things could also be true, but I was leaning towards B. I don't wear glasses, but I remember, this was some years back, but I do remember scanning the yard where he was walking. It was not overrun with Negroes. And a student body of 50,000 nearly. It was not overrun with Negras. Go Huskies. That's the mascot, University of Washington. Like the Florida Gators, University of Washington Huskies. Let's see. Caller in Florida should be with us as well. I'll nab other hands as I see them.
Yes, sir. May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have some reports that I wanted to share. I've been taking some days off from the job, and it's definitely important to take time off. Wanted to start out with that. So I'll return back on Monday, but it's been some reports made to me that there's been some things going on the job. The first is, I think the racist white woman clique, they have been doing a lot of slick things, racist things, practicing racism toward the black male and female, the black female is a supervisor in the civil area, and they just hired a black female employee. All right. And I think it's just something I think the warden is involved with, like usual. But the reason I bring up the black male and female is that an older clique member, because most of them are like, you know, younger or whatever, but she's near retirement, but she's still a part of the racist chat, okay? So the victim of racism reports to me that this particular supervisor, white woman, is approaching her, I guess you could say venting and just trying to come up with ways to initiate a conversation about the other two victims, saying that, well, hey, you know, they just, you know, I've been written up, and they kept me out of an email. They didn't introduce me to the new person, the new black person. And she's just trying to make it seem like she wanted to call them racist. You know, that's what I asked the victim. Is she trying to call them racists? that's just how I just, that's why I concluded. She's trying to call them racists. And she agreed, but of course, this clique member didn't want to come out and just directly say that, but she's making it seem like she's being mistreated by two black people. Now, she's been behaving this way ever since she's gotten that write-up, so to speak, because this person that's saying that he was mistreated because he's gay, he went to another building. So she got in trouble for that, like I mentioned a few weeks ago. So I don't know how the two black people come into play with that. But she, I don't know why she doesn't get upset with the person who has the power to do that to her. So I just think that that could be another setup to practice racism. My next point is, I got a report also where that male, the black male, who's supposed to be so-called in charge in that area, in terms of title positions, this victim was sitting where she usually is seated, and she heard a younger white woman, clique member, in the traffic area, you know, where people come to pay their tickets, citations, and everything. This black male was at the front counter. I guess he was finishing up with helping someone or something. And she overheard this white woman say to him, "Well, if you just knew your place, then everything would be okay." So I know the character of this particular racist suspect, and I can definitely envision her uttering those type of words to this person. I didn't know, she didn't tell me what his response was, but he usually is the type of person who doesn't really want to speak about anything concerning racism and things like that. But this victim shared with me that this is somewhat in retaliation to what the warden is doing to them, because she is about to go, next year. So their entitlement is still very sharp, and it's still intact, and they haven't tried to really make a constructive improvement with how they treat non-white people. So they have been acting in these kinds of ways, and she says that she thinks it's going to get worse. This victim. My next one is, apparently I think that we at our area have finally gotten a new person as well. And my prediction came to be true that this was a white person. So I hadn't seen a person or met a person yet. But it took 25 weeks. From when the last person left to get this person. But as I shared before, there has been attempts to get other people, but that just didn't work out. But really, it's like I said, I just think that, like I mentioned before, they didn't want to get another black person. Because I was looking over my old notes, and my mom shared with me that it was a black lady that says, "Hey, you know, what's going on here? Like, I've been trying to apply multiple times. They won't call me back. They won't call me back." And this is now this, in my viewpoint, this supervisor, my white woman, I think is a racist. Reason I say that is this same person that was applying, she is sharing with me, describing her as professional. She always comes to the front counter, you know, and everything like that. But she's acting like she doesn't know why she hasn't been chosen. Right. And I just think she's being deceitful. Okay. I had two more I wanted to share. There was a post from one of the other white women Facebook page. It says, "Florida needs a hurricane so these new people get scared and leave." So one of this person's associates replies and says, "Let all these new people move here. That's more work for me. More housing development equal more work." And she says, also equals less rural land, which is a no for me. And she uses the term Yanks, right? Yanks hate where they live, so they move here only to vote and make here like where they move from. Like Yanks, Yankees or whatever, I guess, I don't know. I heard them use that at the courthouse. So yeah, she abbreviated it, I guess, and said Yanks. So, and my last one is like there was a report a couple of days ago. A black female named Pamela James at the county sheriff's office. She is filing a discrimination lawsuit along with the federal government. I think that's how they worded it. And she was saying that she has been denied 6 times. She's a lieutenant. I mean, she's a sergeant, right? And she has been denied 6 times to be promoted to the level of a lieutenant. So ever since our last sheriff became a sheriff, a white woman, okay? So it seems like she was trying to say that the past white woman sheriff was mistreating her and denying her that promotion. And she says that when the white woman took that position as sheriff, she made this, it looks like it was discretionary to her, okay? And she said that, well, I'm going to require that you get a degree. So in the news report, it says that this black female, she got a degree, the required degree that was required of her. So she met the criteria and everything. So she still was being denied. And she also said that that's the term she used. They started making like modifications and changes to who could pass the test to be promoted. And she said everyone who benefited were, number one, Caucasian. She used the word Caucasian, and also were poorly qualified. And they were, you know, and she said she'd been working there 20 years and tried 6 times. But these people were coming in and apparently being successful because they're classified as white, you know, of course. But those were the things that she shared in the news report. And that's all I have to share for now. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Right in line with our theme. Unqualified white people moving right on up the ranks. It's like for the white person, it doesn't matter if they dropped out of high school, Mark Furman. Don't finish community college, any of that. Whatever. We get the escalator. You could be a black person, graduated from Harvard, postdoctorate at Yale, Phi Beta Kappa, Clemson grad, valedictorian. The poll is greased. Good luck making it to the top, buddy. Now, he said, and this isn't even the courthouse, he just said this is in the paper, the black female victim of racism, they say, well, you don't have the degree, see? That's why we can't promote you. No degree, no promotion for you. So, well, oh, okay, education for all. We should go to school, right? Right, okay, go to school. Bam, got my degree. Let's huddle, let's see. You still not give it to her? No. Come on, okay. Nope, we got another candidate, sorry. whoa, wait a minute, you said I just got to get, yeah, but we got, while you were studying, we got a better qualified candidate, and they're not better qualified. Well, we got other candidates, and we're going to train them up right, and we think they'll be great, sorry. What? Exactly what the fella said, our listener, who wrote in, said, man, these folks that, you know, are getting the job. Now, he said non-black. He did say that specifically. Excuse me, the person said that specifically. These folks are non-black. Might be white people. Might just be non-black, non-white people. But they are not classified as black. They are getting the promotion. They're not even qualified at what they do. Exactly what we just heard. Ron DeSantis, can you do something about this? I know you're busy. This is important. Then he continues with things that happening specifically at the courthouse. She said 20 years. Like, she's competent. Exactly what we heard. So then we get back to the specific things, shenanigans from the courthouse. Let's see. So we got, they finally hire someone. Months have passed in the segregated section. Can't get a new hire. We got to be incompetent, institutionally designed for us to be incompetent because we're understaffed. Other people get their new staff, qualified or no, whatever the case is, blah, 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 bringing in new folks, bringing in new folks. Finally, we get a new staff, and the segregated section now has a white person. And he says, dang, were they waiting to fill this position? Did we have to be working like slaves over here in the segregated section, like for real, for real? Just because they didn't want to put another nigger here? We're already the segregated section. Why not put another nigger here? At least we'll be fully staffed. Nah. Got that unruly nigger. He'll probably poison a new nigger's thinking we need to get a white woman over there to kind of manage what's happening. Yes. Huh. And then his mom, I forgot, he actually has other attempted family who also work there, fills in the gaps and says, man, we got another black female, came in, competent, professional. Oh, I'm ready to work, help out the Sunshine State, you know, help out our fellow citizens, right? Let's huddle up. Sorry, second. Yeah. Nope. Sorry. We'll find something. We will get a different opening for you. Yeah. Already got too much. Yeah. Like, what in the world? Like, doesn't this impact other citizens? Don't people want prompt, efficient service when they go to the courthouse? They got vital records and things. People that got police records and deeds and covenants and state history and all this. And we're shucking and jiving, messing around, and we just got to find a white person. This is why you can't be sitting there. Now, what if you're that black female? Dang. I know someone at the courthouse. Maybe she knows your mom or whatever. I know people down at the courthouse and everything, and they're understaffed. They need new people. Why didn't they pick me? Now, she could be sitting there going over her resume and, dang, did I misspell something? Are my indentations off? Did I not use boldface print? Do I not have enough education? Did I wear the wrong clothes? And just on and on and on and on and on. No. They're practicing white supremacy racism. It's so simple, yet so difficult for so many of us, Gusty included, to grasp. Even at this late date, George Floyd and everything. Let's see. Then, they got the black male. He's the so-called supervisor. Now, we've heard this one a few times. They're over there, unruly, say, things would work out well if you just knew your place.
Mm-hmm.
Love that in a workplace. Like, oh my God, I wish a white person would say that to me in a work environment, or really any of our Codified Cows listeners. Like, oh man, like, let me get my phone out with a smile. Like, say that one more again. Or you don't have your phone, you can write it down. Things, and you can say it out loud. That's the way I do it as you're writing it. Make sure you get it accurate. Things would work out if I knew my place. June 25. Okay. Did I get that right, Joan? Okay. Now, Joan, I got one quick question. What's my place? And I write that one down too. Joan says, my place is. And write that one down. Pretty sure Joan will be real careful about what she says to you from now on. Now, there will be some unjust network. Can you believe what this nigger said? You gotta watch him. Knew it. Going around here promoting. Gotta watch that one in the segregated section. Asking, that's why I said, you can't be shocked about these type of things. They say these sort of things. I think he said, the person that she said it to doesn't talk about racism. That's fine. Victims guaranteed qualified. See? You don't have to. That's no problem. I don't know if he's friends with you. He doesn't have to be. No problem. I don't know if the white person who said that, I don't know if they would have said it to you. I'm talking our call in Florida. I don't know. Seems like he has a reputation. Like, you got to watch that one. Wee. He might have a couple. Got to keep an eye on that one. I don't know if they would have just came over and casually be like, you know what? Things would be fine if you just knew your place. Like, what? Whoa. What? We got to bring that one up in the meeting. Wow. You're not upset. You're not, like I said, that would make my day. Like, wow, I would have something to share on workplace racism. I would have something amazing to put in my journal. And I would have so many options. Do I have my phone? I can get an audio recording. I can write it down. Just take the notes. Ask them to repeat it. I can say nothing. All of those, I can work them to my advantage to where it solves problems without creating new problems. But, woo, a white person to say such, like, wow, like, break that one down in a way so that we don't think you're talking about white supremacy racism. And we'll all wait patiently with water. Stay hydrated. Let's see. Get my list here. Okay. And then we got the Yank. Now, see, all that. No name call. The people who do the most name calling classified as white is all day long name calling other white people Yanks. Like, what? What? It is almost 2022. Are you in the Civil War? Like, what is going on? What are you talking about? Like, Yanks? Yanks? Carpetbaggers? What are you talking about? Like, come on. Like, and then it keeps up, these new people. Let these new people. Who are you talking to? Yeah. A lot of these. Yeah. New people.
Cold.
Who are you talking about? See, when they make these comments a whole lot of time, I'm not even fuming mad. Let me make sure I understand exactly, like, every syllable of what you are saying. What is my place? Who are these new people? Really, what is a Yank? I can be ignorant about that one too, just to make sure that, you know, I'm thinking the same thing that you are when you say Yanks. What's a Yank? What are they doing that's causing a problem down here? Like, why are we even talking about this connected to workplace or what? I mean, it's just so many, like, being prepared and grasping, like, I understand what I am looking at. The unjust networking, the code, all of it. I understand what I'm looking at. I'm not surprised. I'm not emotional about it either. But I understand the significance of all of this dialogue. The Yanks are coming down here, messing up Florida, new people. And then they even turn around and say, hey, that is work. I mean, hey, new people. Get some work and keep the Yanks out in the rural area, because I don't want to be out there anyway. So we can just pile all the Yanks up out there. I don't have to see them. That's a great win-win for me. What? What? And again, are these the folks that we want as the civil servants? Like, this is the best we got to offer? Like, it doesn't sound very welcome. You're just sitting around name-calling people and bad-mouthing folks. Like, come on. Let's see. Should I get my last one? Oh, yeah. Okay. The venting white woman. She wants to come and gripe. She's been, I think he said she was written up before. She was maybe been one of the ones, the transgressions for doing some gay bashing. Or I don't know what it was, LGBTQ or... Yeah, all that. Doing that incorrect, doing this close to pride and everything too. Like, shame. So she comes, can you believe it? This is ridiculous, offering these, you know what it is? I think And she sounds like she wants to say that these folks are racist. It sounds like she wants to call these black people racist for her getting in trouble, gay bad, or whatever they call it. I don't know what term they put on it, but mistreating this gay person who had to get moved to a different location. Like, any of that venting white person, male or female, that super dangerous. Oh my God. Like, I don't care if they're coming to vent about, this was not like a home type thing. I don't care if it's coming to vent about home things. This in particular, you're coming to gripe and grouse to me about other employees. Woo! This is so unprofessional, inappropriate. Like, if you have a problem with XYZ, Fred, whoever it is, you should speak with Fred or Fred's supervisor. Like, yeah, this is totally unprofessional. It's totally inappropriate. As they say, they have proper channels for all of this. Do you, and you don't even know, do you want me to like agree with you and to get into like, yeah, girl, they are racist. That is so messed up what they did. I can't believe this. They're coming in and saying, bashing these folks and calling you a homophobe. You do what? And then somebody come by to overhear that? Like, let's have both of you in the office. What? Or if this is some type of setup, is she got a recorder so they can say, yeah, they were gossiping about you, Helen. She was in there and saying that you were all this and that and didn't like saying that you were racist, basically. Yep, I got it. Caused dissension among some black people. None of that is the most. Talk about one where you don't need to say a word if it's going to be anything. Like, this seems really unprofessional, inappropriate. Proper channels, you should speak or you should communicate your concerns to that person directly or their supervisor. So do not ever. And I wouldn't do that with non-white people either. They just want to, because I mean, really, that's just gossiping. I mean, really, that's at minimum. That's like the nicest label I could, but it's just gossiping. Like, come on. I get a reputation as someone. It might be time for me to do some gossiping and venting, and I want to call these black females racist and all the rest of it, but I know not to go to, you know, Gus's cubicle or closet or whatever it is. I don't go over there because he does not do that gossiping or what have you. Pull out that recorder and notepad and all the rest of it and have me mad. I have to go gossip about him too. So I go somewhere else. That's the type of reputation that you want. They do not even begin to come in your direction with that sort of foolishness, whether they're particularly gossiping about other employees, but I don't want to hear about the home stuff either. Super danger. Super danger. Much obliged, caller in Florida, and bravo for days off. Like, I super support that. We heard so much about people talking about depression, you know, and frustration and just the mental health toll of all this trauma. Like, bravo, take some days off, put your feet up, drink some water, and collate your notes, you know, do some writing or what have you. But everybody taking mental health days and like scheduling them out so that you can really enjoy and whatever you do that, you know, replenishes your spirit and puts you in a good space mentally, spiritually, all of that. Carve out the time to do it, especially when you can feel it. You're feeling stressed and anxious and sleepy. Quality rest is another one. You can take time off and get your rest back up if you haven't been sleeping well. A lot of folks have said that too. But all of that is so important and so frequently neglected by victims of white supremacy, especially black victims. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Check out some of the other folks on the switchboard. Don't wait till the last moment if you have commentary, suggestions to share. Some of the other folks with a hand up, proceed.
Hello, may I be heard? Can you hear me?
Greetings, Irie in Louisiana. Yes, ma'am.
Hotep, how you doing, Gus?
hope you're well. I hope everyone is well. I'm feeling pretty good. I just left the gym as part of my codification now for my new occupation that I'm focusing on, singing, making sure that my physique and everything is in shape and, you know, it helps you sing better. I'm just pleased to report that. It feels really good, and I hope people are getting some exercise. So I wanted to suggest something to someone that called in. I guess it was last week. I was listening to archives, and she said someone came to her home and was basically gossiping and ridiculing a non-white person about not being able to, not being proficient. And what should she do? I didn't get a chance to hear what people suggested, but I want to suggest that she wait a little while to report it. And when she does report it, I would do it from a different email, so that way I'm anonymous, or even call in anonymously and say, hey, someone by this name came in and displayed some unprofessional candor about another employee, and it made me uncomfortable, because I know uncomfortable is a trigger word that some white people I've observed, they respond to it. I won't say they respect it, but they respond to it because it has implications. But that's what I would suggest. Just stall it out. Don't do it right away, so it kind of throws that person off, that, you know, so he can't pinpoint, oh, it was that lady, you know, that black lady. So there's that. I have a workplace racism, interestingly, in the area of, what is that, 4 or 3, entertainment. So, like I said, I've been doing music and, well, getting back to it, because I did it before, and a non-white black male asked me to perform with him, and I obliged. So when we got to what we thought was going to be the park where the Juneteenth show was supposed to be, because it was being held by a park district, we got there and there was no one there. And so he was like, we're in the wrong place. I just realized we're in the wrong place. And I called and it's another place. So I said, okay. So I followed him. And the place for the Juneteenth celebration was a bar. So I was like, this is peculiar. It's at a bar, not the park where everybody can be in the open air. It's nice weather. Families, you know, can congregate. Got in there. While we were setting up the sound, a white man came back with some, looked like paperwork, but then I observed it was a check. And he tells my friend, oh, man, I'm so glad that you're honest. You know, it's so rare these days. And then I looked at him, and then I looked at the white guy. I said, well, yeah, he's a God-fearing man. You don't have to worry about him stealing. And so the white guy walked off after saying something else to my friend. And I was like, what happened? And he told me they cut me 2 checks. They already paid me for the show, but then they gave me another check when I came here. I said, interesting, really, really interesting. So moving on, we did the show, and we performed African Cry by New Birth, which wasn't really a hit with the crowd, considering they were mostly white, with some sprinkles of non-white people that were vibing with it. And me being the agitator that I am, I know it may not be codified, but I raised my fist up during African Cry and said some libations for the ancestors during another set or another song where he had ancestors speaking, one of which I was so pleased I was able to convince him to play a clip of Dr. Frances Cress Welsing on... it's a black female show. I can't remember her name right now. But she was talking about it, and she spoke directly. The clip that he selected directly said that we're in a system of racism, white supremacy, so forth and so on. So I was able to observe this white male. He looked like he was a runner, so he was already kind of pink. Well, we made him pinker. So there was that. And then on the way out, he was playing the bongos. My friend was playing the bongos. So he was like, why don't you give him a little speech when we done? I'm like, you sure about that? Because he knows. We had an argument 3 days before about codification and white supremacy, and he's confused because his mother is white. So I was surprised he was letting me do that. So when we ended, I was very direct, and I said, thank you all. I said, thank you all for letting us share this music today. And I just want to say that for some African people, slavery was over. So-called slavery was over in 1865, but some people did not find out as late as 1965. And then I said, and it continued. I said, mass incarceration is the continuation of the slavery of human beings. And then I said, white supremacy racism is the continuation of the enslavement of human beings. And then, thank you for this, Gus, I said, replace white supremacy with justice immediately. I think there were applause. Couldn't really tell. The non-white black people loved it. They loved it. They were like, you were great. That was good. Everyone else was looking at us like we had a shirt on that said coronavirus. They were scattering away from us. So then we go to grab some food because the white lady said, oh, I told the food truck to save you all some food. And I've been performing over 15 years by now. So I'm used to there being food for artists or free drinks, something like that. So she said, I told him to save you some food. I was like, cool, we get to eat a little something. When we got out to the food truck, it was not a food truck that was even being operated by non-white people. So I knew it wasn't owned by non-white people. And nothing there was vegan, so I couldn't eat it. But then my friend and his girlfriend wanted to eat, and they didn't have enough money or something. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is the food wasn't free. She was like, oh, I'm like, you sent us off. Like, you made it seem like this food was free. You okay, whatever. So not only, you know, we had to pay for it. And it was just really, it was tacky, borderline trashy. And I'm stuck on the fact that a Juneteenth celebration was being held at a bar. So then we leave there and we go somewhere else and we're walking to get some food. And this white guy walks up to us and says, hey guys, happy Juneteenth, guys. I mean, for all of us. And then his girlfriend was like, for all of us? Why? How? We didn't ask him that, but we were like, this is really turning into Kabuki theater, you know? And I'm like, it, the whole situation with the observation at this point is terribly trashy. Someone else was saying, white people get another day off for something that they don't deserve, if anything. They definitely don't deserve to have a day off. There was one other thing. So I was helping my sister out at the courthouse in Mobile, Alabama. And I've taught myself how to do some law. So I was guiding her through it. I told her to file a motion that morning. But when she got to the courthouse, they told her they didn't have any motion. And I was like, what courthouse doesn't have motions, blank motion forms for you to fill out? So then I called with her on the line, and the clerk was like, I said, where do we get the motion forms online? Because I see you have a portal for uploading them, but I don't see the forms on the form list for your motions. I don't know anything about that, she said, white lady. I don't know what you're talking about. I said, you're a court clerk? She said, yes. I said, and you don't know anything about motion? Well, the attorneys make their own motions. Okay, so that told me what I needed to know. You don't provide them for pro se lawyers. You have to, they don't want you to pursue due diligence, and they don't want you to pursue justice. And that was really interesting, and it really frustrated me. And that's really all I wanted to share, but I'm definitely not going to be observing Juneteenth in the celebrational sense at all. Now that I've had this experience and realize it's been co-opted the way it has been. And that's it for now. Thank you.
Well, shout out to Angola down there in Louisiana. Much obliged, Irie. The tackiness of Juneteenth, man, that's all I've heard. Like, once, you know, they announced, like, Google and all these major corporations are doing Juneteenth celebrations. I don't know if they had theirs at a bar, too, but, like, come on. This is just tacky, trashy, terroristic. Now, before all of this, I have seen Juneteenth celebrations. Got disconnected.
May I be heard?
I'm back. Yes, sir. I just wanted to say for Irie really quick, we can hear you also, sir, just before to Irie really quick. All the Juneteenth celebrations I've seen are super tacky. Yours would be all of the above, tacky, trashy, terroristic. Bar, the ones that I've seen, they were at parks, like she said, open air. We got the Rona. Let's get some fresh air, not be inside, get some sunshine. No. And in fact, that's one of those, like, as soon as I got that information, like, oh, let's do the Juneteenth celebration, where's it going to be? When Mr. Fong talks about not enough questions, like, where's it going to be? Such a, apparently, maybe he wrote down the information wrong, because you said you all went to, I guess, whatever location, and nobody was there. And he's like, oh, wait a minute, we're at the wrong spot. We're supposed to be such and such and such. So I guess that would be one for everybody. Let's make sure that we got accurate information. And then once we find out, like, look, like, whoa, Juneteenth at a bar. I don't know. Like, that would have given me tremendous pause just from the very beginning. And then, you know, yeah, bravo for, you know, getting them to do a little Dr. Wellsing. Right on. Speak honestly about the problem. I guess some of the non-white people appreciated your commentary. Individuals who practice racism, white supremacy will be defensive, angry, as they should be. The food, now, I'm not an artist, singer, entertainer, none of the above, so, you know, I've never went out to perform and had adoring fans waiting, and, you know, we saved, you know, open bag of pretzels for you or anything else. But I have been, worked in the entertainment business, and that is common, where the performers, you take care of them, you know. Depending on how big of a performer they are, it might be, you know, caviar, champagne waiting, but of course you're not paying for it. So yeah, that's totally different. And then they didn't even have, you know, plant-based, yummy, delicious, nutritious food to offer. So, yeah, all the way around. Let's see, we had
not a black-owned business either.
Oh, and see. Just everything would start from, where is this at? A bar. Oh, yeah, I'm good. we'll pass on this. We'll have to catch the next Juneteenth celebration. But bravo for being at the gym and taking great care of yourself. You sing better, feel better, look better. Life is better when you're feeling good and in the correct body type we are supposed to be in. Let's see, our caller, 4797.
Good evening. May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say good evening to everyone on the line. I hope everyone is having the best evening they can possibly have. I've actually experienced the Juneteenth commemoration in the state of Texas, and usually it was done around family and in an outdoor setting. So I don't imagine that I would participate in any celebrations If anyone called it a celebration, I don't imagine that I would be participating in that. But my children were asked to wear a cultural T-shirt for school for June 19th. We did not participate with sitting in school with any type of cultural T-shirts. I'm not sure exactly what that would have meant. So that's my thoughts on the June 19th commemoration. I did want to report that I have utilized suggestions made by Cal's listeners in regard to how to approach a person asking about my vaccination status. And I've codified it to a very short sentence, which is, I've decided not to discuss my vaccination status, nor anyone else's. And I leave it at that. And of course, I don't say it robotically. I try to be courteous with how I say it, but very firm. And it has worked exceptionally well, better than I would have thought. So that piece of codification I've utilized, and I appreciate the Cow's listeners for making those suggestions to me. In addition to that, I wanted to report that at my children's martial arts school, they do their practices, and I say hello to everyone, and I'm courteous to everyone. And when I introduce myself to them, I introduce them with my full name. And I was not codified in one response from the sensei of the Martial Arts Academy, and he called me by a shortened version of my name. And it was just so quick that I did not respond in the most codified way, but I've made a decision to be on the lookout for that type of greeting to me. And one of the reasons that I am very much on the lookout of that is because if I were, prior to me being more informed about racism and white supremacy, and by the way, this person is a white person, he's a white male, white man, and when I first began taking my child to the school, I called him by his name, Mike, and he corrected me and saying that, well, in the school, my students called me Sensei Mike, to which I, at the time, I responded, well, I am not one of your students. But that is his school, and that's a that is a title, Sensei. So I've since then addressed him as Sensei Mike. And if I were more confused about racism, I would have thought him shortening my name would not have been any big issue, because it's just a common thing that many people do, is when they want to be more familiar, they will shorten your name to make it seem more friendly. But I've become much more codified. Although I was not codified in that particular response, I'm codified in my thinking, that I will not allow this white man to call me by any type of shortened version of my name. And one other piece of workplace racism that I wanted to report was that I believe that because of my consistency with my work, I received an offer for longer hours at a higher rate of pay, which is it's conducive to my schedule. And I believe that I received that offer because I was, over the past 6 months since doing the job, which is picking up children who are in foster care, taking them to school and then from school. Since the school year is ending, I have been offered to have a corporate shuttle type of job where I am paid a higher rate than the normal part of the day for a longer portion of the day, which fits into my schedule and allows me to bring home the income in a shorter amount of time than I would normally, and without having to deal with, and by the way, I am a rideshare driver in New York, and without having to deal with people who are aggressive or combative toward me as a driver. So I believe that was done for me because of the consistency. I'm not sure how long that will last, but at least it is a benefit to me and gives me a lot more security during the time of year where it is much slower and people tend to make lower income for the summer months. And that's all I have to report. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And again, I appreciate the suggestion. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged. Thank you so much for, thanks so much for calling to give us the update. I always appreciate when we get updates from folks, yay or nay. If they listened to the program, heard some suggestions from listeners, whoever, guests, for workplace racism, they tried them out, they worked, awesome. Let's hear it. That way people know, okay, this seems effective. Some people have used it and got constructive results. Try it out, or say, eh, y'all don't know what you're talking about. You know, I got a brain computer. I can think for myself. Great. What did you try? Let us know, and let us know, you know, how it works out. That way we won't be giving out, you know, commentary that is faulty, and people can say, hey, I not only did I think about it and it seemed logical, I used it, and this is the result I got. So definitely much obliged for that one. The school component, I said the exact same thing. What is a, what is it, cultural, piece of cultural competency or a cultural t-shirt to wear? Like, what is that? Like, I would need, like, can you explain it to me? Like, I don't even know if we, is this something we're going to have to go purchase? Like, what are you talking about? Do we need, like, kente cloth socks? I don't even know where to begin. Do we need to get a Tupac shirt? What are you talking about? Yeah, I'm glad to just have your offspring not participate. Like, we're good. Moving forward with other activities that are more constructive. For Sensei Mike, I'm so glad, just pointing out, if he said, hey, my name is Sensei Mike. Well, or he says, my students call me Sensei Mike. Well, I'm not one of your students. Now, I'm all for call people with their, you know, what they want to be called. That might be part of his business shtick, you know, that his expertise, you know, this is my official handle at all times. But that might be part of it. Whatever. Call people what they want to be called. But I do think that's important. Like, hey, I'm not one of your students. Still, like, all the parents come in when they're dropping their children off or whatever. And they have, Sensei Mike, hey, how you doing? And if they just say Mike, do you correct them too? That would just be, you know, something I'd be paying attention to and or asking, but that is spectacular. Just, hey, this is my name. Do not shorten it. Abbreviations, like you said, like I think a lot of times, particularly individuals classified as white, they will do that as though there is some extra familiarity between us when there is not, or at least in some situations it shouldn't be, especially if we're talking workplace, it shouldn't be. Like, this is what my name is. Call me that. Every time, not these little derivatives and nicknames and all the rest of it. Nope. This is my name. Just calling me my name every time will be fine. But bravo for the upgrades and, you know, them more compensation and all that for just being, that's my word, being consistent. Hard to find people that will be consistent and do consistent quality work that is difficult to find in the system of white supremacy, which in many ways disincentivizes black people from being consistent hard workers Why would I be a consistent hard worker if that's not going to be rewarded? I'm just going to be thought of as lazy and passed over for promotions and not paid well and fired first for no reason. Why would I be a hard, consistent, quality worker? Plantation to 2021, slave logic, white supremacy logic, excuse me. Folks satisfied? Anything they need to get in before we conclude? Assume folks are satisfied. Hope everyone is. Whoops. Make sure I didn't mess up. Everybody's good.
Everybody's good.
Grant. Alrighty. We'll be here tomorrow. Compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Again, we'll try to make sense of what has transpired last week or so. I don't know if it's racism, white supremacy, but I am paying attention to the collapse down in Miami with the condo. I don't know about the racial classifications of the victims and what have you, but that is rather interesting in the system of white supremacy, in addition to the heat wave. Incidentally, I can report now this program, I was prepping for it. It was 4 p.m. Pacific time. It was about 85 degrees. It's almost 8 p.m., or it's 8 p.m. now. The temperature has gone up 2 degrees, so that it's 87 degrees. At the time, I said, oh, wow, I don't really think it's warm enough to swim. It went up that 2 degrees since the program. I said, oh, maybe it is warm enough to swim just with the 2 degree bump up to 87. So we'll have to see. It's still bright and sunny. Best time of the year to be in Seattle. It is still the plantation. The black police officers, what did they say? Watermelon, Popeye's fried chicken. All of that said, like, hey, best time of the year to be here. Like, it is super bright, sunny. You get really long hours of daylight. Like, wowie, spectacular. And even the 87, I can't say this as we wrap up, 87 degrees here is very different from 87 degrees in like a totally, like in the South or Alabama, someplace like that. Like, it's a totally different environment when you don't have all that humidity to battle. Like, you can actually be outside and still breathe and not be dripping in hot boiling water, basically. We'll see if I feel that same way tomorrow when it's 97. Anywho, much obliged for folks tuning in. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. Sobriety would be best, especially in the summertime. The alcohol dehydrates you. Drink more water. Sobriety would be best, even under conditions of, or especially under conditions of white supremacy racism. We need a fully functioning brain computer. In addition to being sober, if you are going out, be very alert about your surroundings. It's been such a wacky year and so many people are armed. You just don't want to be mindless while you're out and about, even if you are kind of rejoining society, as they say, for the summertime. If you see anyone being loud and rowdy, distance. There's so many new gun owners, racism, all the rest. If you didn't leave your residence prepared to kill and or die, this is not the time for random confrontations with strangers. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. No name calling. We heard a lot of that even in workplace racism, Yanks, all the rest of it. Really, and the gossip, see that gossiping, so much of that is in the workplace, just sitting around and gossiping about these folks that you work right next to for 35, 40 hours a week or whatever it is. No name calling, no gossiping. Like, these are such, you know, just really simple things that we can do that help solve problems, minimize conflict. Cannot be said enough. Really working sincerely to minimize conflict at all times with other non-white people. Drink lots and lots of water. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm up. A victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.